hospital to order.
First couple weeks.
We're first here from... Mr. Bruce Goldberg. Would you please come forward and make an opening statement, please?
Chair Courtney, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bruce Goldberg. I'm the director of the State's Department of Human Services. I have just some brief opening comments. You know, first and foremost, I want to thank you for the opportunity to open tonight's hearing. I want to thank you for both.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm joined now by Representative Tomei, so I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I want to thank you for both your interest and involvement in the Oregon State Hospital and for holding these hearings. And I want to particularly thank Senator Courtney. Last January, I approached him about forming a legislative committee as a means to provide the appropriate public venue for oversight, for accountability, and input into our efforts to assure quality within the Oregon State Hospital. I don't think the work of this committee has been an opportunity for public input and has been extremely helpful in our efforts to improve services at the hospital. As director of the Department of Human Services, I'm ultimately accountable for our ability to provide quality care at the Oregon State Hospital, and I remain committed to assuring that that's going to happen. You know, having said that, we, and I mean all of us, Oregon, we have a lot of work to do. While I know this committee is focused, and appropriately so, on the hospital, I think we also need to recognize the context and the environment in which we're working in. Too many people in Oregon do not have access to mental health care services in their community. And as we seek to create quality services within the state hospital, I think it's imperative that we focus our attention, our resources, and our resolve on assuring that all Oregonians have access in their communities to the full continuum of mental health care and addiction treatment they need to support, encourage, and assure recovery. This is not simply an ethical thing to do. It's also a fiscal and societal imperative. We clearly have to decrease the number of people who, because they cannot get the treatment they need in their community, end up in our hospitals, both our acute care as well as our state hospital, our jails, and our prisons. We must also work equally hard to end the stigma of mental illness that hinders both these efforts and, probably more importantly, destroys our collective sense of humanity and compassion. I know that all of you share the concern about these issues I just outlined, and I know you're working to address those. And with that said, I also know and understand that the focus of this committee is on the state hospital, and that's as it should be. And as such, what I'd like to do is just spend a moment highlighting some of what's been achieved since this committee was formed 5 months ago. And as I said, I know we have a lot of work to do, and you'll hear more about that from Mr. Orr as well as from others in a few minutes. You know, first and foremost, we have a new superintendent at the hospital, Mr. Roy Orr. You've met him. I think more importantly, we have an individual who brings a wealth of professional experience in hospital management. We brought the appropriate professional expertise to the table. Number two, we've been working closely with the legislature to identify some of the resources we need to appropriately staff the hospital and make the needed changes there. And specifically, you, the legislature, have made available to us $6 million to add staff and make some of the improvements that we need to make. Mr. Orr will talk with you tonight about our progress in achieving just that. Three, we're on schedule to replace the Oregon State Hospital Salem campus with a state-of-the-art recovery center. You know, most of you, we've been briefing, have seen the plans. We're working cooperatively with the City of Salem. We're currently getting the appropriate permits, and we will break ground as scheduled this fall. The next thing I want to cover and focus on for a moment, because I think this is an area of one high importance as well as common interest, is we've begun planning to establish an Oregon State Hospital Oversight Board, a board of directors of sorts. I think this is a real opportunity to create additional oversight and transparency for the state hospital operations. And it's also an opportunity to bring additional community expertise to the table to help us in our work. I've asked Mr. Orr to convene a small group of stakeholders, consumers, hospital personnel to meet over the next 3 months to work together to provide a plan for doing just that. Clearly, there's a lot of questions to address about scope, responsibility, membership, charge, a myriad of issues. And I think there needs to be some work done in planning that. And I would look to bringing that work back to you as a committee for your input, consideration, and hopefully that we can work together to make that a reality. It's certainly my intent to implement that. You know, finally, and the last comment is that, you know, we've established an effort to move to a zero seclusion and restraint environment. We're working closely with our national consultants regarding improving patient care in the state hospital. We've hired a new security director. We've increased our ability to provide peer support. And a number of other things that Mr. Orr will talk to you about during the last half of this hearing. So with that, I'd probably taken more time than allotted as in my role as making some introductory comments, and I'll stop there.
Thank you, Director Goldberg. Any comments for the director? Representative Jensen wishes to comment.
No, thank you, Mr. Senator Courtney. I wish to ask a question, if I may do that.
Representative Jensen wishes to ask the question of the director, Dr. Goldberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Goldberg, a number of, it seems like months ago now, and probably was, I sent you a list of umpteen questions regarding the facility, and I've never heard anything from either your office or the department on that list. Am I to expect to hear something or hear completion about resolution of those questions today from others, or did something happen when it got out into cyberspace there that you didn't get it?
Chair Courtney and Representative Jensen, I don't know what happened because I have not seen that, whether that's due to cyberspace or me or what, I don't know. What I would offer is if you could please provide me with that, I will be certain to have very prompt answers. I just don't know what you're...
And Representative Jensen, I think what happened at our last hearing was that we took your questions and incorporated them with some other questions that people had produced for that meeting we had. It seems so long ago now, in February. And so I think that we probably can easily come up with the document. But I think what had happened is that we asked committee members to submit questions that we were going to ask of the witnesses that we had at that hearing in February. And some of yours got asked, but there wasn't time to ask all of everybody's specific questions. So I'm guessing the department probably received that document maybe through us, and we can certainly go back and...
I don't want to follow on that... thank you, Representative. I understand that it was after that meeting that I sent the list to the agency or to Dr. Goldberg's office and was looking for further responses.
I'm sorry, then I must have been thinking of an earlier.
No, I think it contained much of the same information, but
Dr. Goldberg,
can I get a copy and look at
my camera? I can retrieve it from cyberspace. Right. I will do that for you.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Goldberg.
Thank you.
Now it's my time to make an open statement. Before I do want to thank my fellow legislators who have been here, some of whom cannot be here. So I guess Senator Jackie Williams is out of country. Senator Ted Ferriero is healing from his injuries. Otherwise, he would be here. Senator Carter, I am told by note, had just finished teaching a class, and she is en route. Is that right, Mr. Committee? Right? Of course, the good representative Brian Klim from Salem is here. The good coach here, Rosenbaum, is here. Good representative Carolyn Tomei is on the phone, right?
Hello, Senator. Yes, I'm here.
Just make sure. Of course, we've just heard from Pendleton, all of Pendleton. I want to talk now a little bit about another person who's here.
He's going to get started. He's going to be here as well.
Excuse me. Watch this.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Special recognition.
I have, you know, this is interesting. One of the last times I saw Representative Berger, she's in the hospital. She's going to go on some hip surgery. And she no longer was attending my spinning class. She and I do, which, I don't know if you know what spinning classes are, if you even care what spinning classes are. A cycling class, the Y. And so I visited her in the hospital because that's what I tend to do. She didn't really appreciate it, but I did it anyway. I remember that day. And lo and behold, next time I see her, she's on crutches. Next time I see her, she's on a cane. And now she just hands me a note that I went to a spinning class with you. So she is a remarkable physical specimen. And she just sent it here. There's the note. She's a remarkable physical specimen. See, Representative Rosenbaum, I do know what I'm doing. I have lead-ups. I do lead-up to things. So
I have never doubted that.
Well, you should doubt it. I do want to thank Representative Berger for being here. I hope you're just something else. You're a tough, hearty person, and I'm so impressed. I hope I could one day be as strong as you are, have been all your life. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Senator.
Yeah, that's all I'm going to say.
And no thanks for visiting me at the worst time in the hospital.
No. All I know is you didn't have a lot of time for me, but everybody else in the room you had time for. But that's okay. I don't have a problem with that. This is our fourth meeting, and that after we created this group of legislators at the request, Dr. Goldberg is correct. He said, you know, you could help me after that CRIPA report came down, as you may recall, which was very critical. That's the Civil Rights Incarcerated Persons Act, that was reference to that. And we created this group of legislators, Democrats and Republicans, House Senate members, to help the Oregon State Hospital comply with that report, which has now become a legendary report. And those first meeting, I'll never forget, it was on January 11th. It seems like a long time ago, but, you know, and we were out at the state hospital and we had a meeting. And then we held two meetings in February when we were in session here, February 6th and 20th, and this is our fourth meeting. And it was we worked closely with DHS and the Oregon State Hospital to establish timelines responding to the report and improving the situation for patients at the hospitals, as well as the staff at the hospital, as well as the general public's knowledge and understanding of what we're trying to do. This is the first meeting we've held since we last met in February 20th, and it's the first meeting we've held since Superintendent Roy Orr and Speaker Special Master James Hargraves have taken on their new roles some 10 weeks ago. And we intentionally wanted to wait a period of some several weeks to give them a chance to see what they would find and what they could perhaps get up and going. So we're going to hear from them. The last part of our meeting tonight, they're going to come forward and speak with us, and I assume maybe Dr. Goldberg might even join them again. That'll be his call as we find out exactly how hard they've been working, all the things they've been trying to do out there with the staff and the people who work so hard to take care of the patients there. At the time, also, this is the time to have what we call general public testimony on current issues of the hospital. Last meeting, we had invited testimony. And this week, this meeting, we're having general testimony by people who have signed up, and I have the sheets right here, general public. So I do thank all of you for coming out tonight, and those of you who are going to testify, we look forward to your testimony. We will limit testimony to 3 to 5 minutes. I only say that because we can't stay here forever, and I do want to make sure everybody gets a chance to speak tonight. So we will run a clock 3 to 5 minutes, so I hope you'll try to comply with that. We want to hear from you, but, you know, I hope you can perhaps, you know, 3 to 5 minutes, you know, that's, you know. I have to tell you something now. I'm just going to say this. I don't know what's going to be said, but sometimes, well, this is not time for testimony dealing with the Psychiatric Security Review Board issues. We're not here tonight to deal with that issue. There's other groups dealing with that. We're not here to deal with community mental health issues. I just want to say that. It's not that those aren't big issues. Believe me, they're big issues, and they're part of the overall picture. But we are here basically at the Oregon State Hospital and that report and trying to stay very focused. And so with that, Any other comments or comments want to be made by my colleagues before I start to call individuals who've signed up to come testify tonight? Want to add anything? Or I keep looking to my right, but there's nobody there. But anybody on my left want to say anything more? Representative Berger, do you want to say anything? You don't have to say a word.
I think we're ready for public testimony, sir.
Okay. Is this the first sheet? Sam, help me here. Danielle Chapman and Sam, I can't pronounce the last name. I'm not going to say it because if I say it and insult you, then you'll be mad at me. So will Sam and Danielle come up here, please? Perhaps that'll work. If you would, please. Now, when you come up, as you know, you have to identify who you are. Just tell us your name and maybe an address, and then that's for the record so we know. Okay? Could you do that, please?
My name is Donnell Chapman.
Okay.
I am the president of the local SEIU at the hospital.
Okay.
This is Sam Canano. He's the treasurer.
Okay.
And you just said you didn't want to hear about PSRB or any of that stuff, and that's what he was going to tell you about. So I guess you get to just listen to me.
Okay. Again, PSRB and issues, it's a big issue, so please, we're not at all, there's even another group of people working on that as we speak, as a task force, so I don't mean to demean that or say that we're not going to have to look at that in the next session or anything. It's just that we have a significant responsibility workload here, and that is why. So I hope you respect that. In no way am I trying to stop testimony on other issues, but I hope you respect what I said.
Well, I understand that, and we have the flyers here that basically tell you, you can read what we know of it and what we see as a solution for that.
All
so
right.
Maybe you can pass it on to, you know, where it can go.
Okay. Thank you, Daniel. Go ahead.
Okay. The New Oregon State Hospital will require a near doubling of the number of people providing hands-on direct care to hire enough staff members to meet the needs of the new OSH when it opens. Of all those individuals that need to be hired and trained for that doubling. In addition, our workforce is aging, and many of the most dedicated workers are preparing for retirement. Those workers will have to be replaced. The tremendous base of knowledge and years of experience and commitment to patient care can be passed on to new employees in mentoring and training programs if action is taken now to create opportunities for those workers to share their wisdom as they train the next generation of workers at OSH. What we have done. The leadership of the Local 392 has been actively working with administration of OSH to allow greater flexibility of hiring for a newly created acuity and security program. We recently signed a letter of agreement that allows for the expediting of hiring of 119 positions approved by legislation. Mental health therapy technicians, 88 positions. Security tech, 9 positions. Transporting aid, 22 positions. Also, what we are doing is that we are working with administration to move forward with the new certified nursing assistance classes to increase the potential application pool to better meet the needs of OSH. In essence, we're growing our own. Also, we are working cooperative with administration to share our ideas about training programs, mentorship, and just compensation for the workforce that will allow workers who want to advance the education and specialized training necessary for them to achieve their goals. We have also been actively recruiting within our communities and their communities to encourage the new generation to join state service and to become treatment provider caregivers to OSH. What still needs to be done? The ratio of management staff to working or line staff needs to be reduced to reflect the current community standards for mental health provision. No agency has a high ratio of administrators to workers as the Department of Human Services. Repressive, non-cooperative, business-as-usual managers must be encouraged to change with the times or seek their futures elsewhere. Compensation in the form of wages, health care, and retirement benefits for all workers' positions within the hospital must be as good or better than what's in the community. Tangible rewards such as education, training, perhaps student loan forgiveness, improved retirement packages, and other compensations are necessary for the recruitment and retention of the kind of highly motivated and dedicated employees that the new SH will require to be successful. A steady and non-interrupted source of funds for the provision of mental health services throughout the state is necessary to prevent the boom and bust cycles that have left Oregon's mental health system drained, depleted, and inadequate to meet the current needs of the Oregon mentally ill. Planning for staffing of the Junction City facility needs to begin now, along with planning for treatment and the mirage of other needs required by the new hospital. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? Any questions? Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
oh, yes,
could you ask people who are testifying to speak up a little bit louder?
Okay.
Thank you.
I think it's simply a matter of speaking in the microphone or the middle of the network because sometimes it doesn't pick up. Thank you, Representative Tomei. Could you pick up any of that?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I forgot to thank you in the beginning. It's an honor to be here, and thank you so much.
I hope you're going to stay around at the end of the meeting because we're going to hear from Superintendent Orr.
Yes.
And Master maybe may not, though, comment on things that you've discussed with us here tonight, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. And, Sam, you're going to leave us a document, is that right, that I'm supposed to pass on to somebody?
Yes.
All right. We got that. Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Sam. Don Moore, please. Again, if you remember... I'm not telling you to swallow a microphone, but, you know, it's one of those deals.
My name is Don Moore. Just a citizen. I happen to be a
Don,
neighbor.
Could you just a little bit closer to that
was
microphone?
Closer,
yeah.
Closer?
Oh, can you bring it? Can't you, do they move? Or are they permanent?
Yeah.
Bring it, right? Can you hear this, Carolyn?
That's, I can hear you very clearly.
Okay.
So everybody can hear me. Can you hear the witness?
Well, let him say something more.
Sure, I'll. we'll give it a good shot. My name is Don Moore. I'm a past president of NAMI of Multnomah County.
That's better.
I'm on the board of directors for SARDA, which is Schizophrenia and Related Disorders Alliance of America, and also on the board of directors for ASHA, which is a international organization for international information about mental health issues. It's great interest and sincerity to offer the following testimony. I have a daughter who suffers from schizophrenia, but she's luckily has not had to use the facilities of the state hospital system, but I do know people who are former patients, current patients, parents, family members, and employees of the state hospital. I have three areas of general concern. First consideration should be given to encouraging the participation of support mechanisms in the community to assist those who are confined to the hospital that would supplement and complement the treatment they receive while in the hospital. NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, has started a consumer-run class, peer-to-peer, which could be supported and held on-site to address the needs of some patients at the hospital. In addition, there's an organization, Schizophrenics Anonymous, which has been in existence since 1984, which has over 150 affiliates and is active in seven countries, which also can be integrated to provide support not only in the hospital itself, but provide community support while patients deal with transition to and reintegration from within the community. This reintegration is a particular problem cited in the Cripple letter. Second, Oregon is severely lacking in community facilities, but I guess I mentioned that only to the extent that the transition of people in and out of the hospital is specifically noted in the report where they had 18 patients on the discharge list for more than 1 year and 15 on the list for more than 6 months. I'm familiar with a facility in Michigan called Rose Hill where the cost per resident is $50,206 per year from their 2006 tax return, and the Oregonian suggested that the cost in the state hospital is $161,643. So there are great concerns that I have about the cost effectiveness and how we treat that and how we are not getting people into and out of the facility. Third, the nurse staffing issues are very detrimental to budget concerns and patient care. My wife happens to be an employee at POSH. Her observations of the need for trained staff and the practice of using travel nurses and overtime of staff are chilling. In addition, there's not a systematic program in place to attract and retain good nursing staff, nor encouragement enough for those who desire to improve their staff position that are dedicated to the field of mental health to pursue nursing degrees. Lack of consistency of staff to work with the patients makes the rehabilitation of patients even more difficult. If the difficulties are critical now, what happens, and I refer to the speaker in front of me, what happens when the new facility opens, which will require even greater numbers of personnel? It's a problem that needs to be addressed. So there should be consideration given to develop a new nursing candidates to choose the state hospital as a good place to use their skills and serve our community. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Don. Are there any questions? Thank you for your testimony. And next we have Ron Faniak. Ron, are you here? I don't know if I'm saying your name correctly. Good afternoon. Thanks for being here.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you. Please go ahead.
My name is Ron Faniak, and I thank you for this opportunity to be able to talk with you about patient care at the state hospital. A little background about myself. I'm a qualified mental health professional in Oregon. I have over 30 years' experience managing programs that support the effort of people with mental illness to achieve their quality of life goals. I've managed programs in four different states and in community-based programs and in state institutions. From 1976 until 1981, I was chief of the Rehabilitation Services Bureau at the Montana State Hospital. And when I was hired in 76, the hospital and the state had just received a letter similar to the received from the feds to report about conditions at the hospital and threats about the Department of Justice coming in. And I was hired, when the superintendent hired me, he said he wanted me to change the hospital. I thought he meant to develop programs, which the report said the hospital was deficient in. Later on, as I tried to develop programs, I realized he was talking about the culture in the hospital. So I'll take a little different tack, instead of talking about staffing and other bureaucratic kinds of things, just talk a bit about the culture for the patients. I came to Oregon to be executive director of Mount Angel Training Center in Mount Angel. And we had a contract with the Marion County Mental Health to provide community support program to people discharged from the state hospital living in North Marion County and did some work therapy. It was a man that I got to know, and a real capable man who had severe depression, and when he had a bout of depression, he was incapacitated. And we brought him in for work, and we gave him some responsibility, and gradually got him to do more and more, and develop more confidence in himself. Every year we have an appreciation banquet for people who have benefited their organization. And it's customary we have a person from our program for people with developmental disabilities to do a welcoming speech. We also have people from our mental health program do a welcoming speech. And this man was chosen to be the welcoming speech. And he gave a very fine speech talking about how he had changed and developed in the program. He also was on the work crew that was set up for the Oktoberfest building for the thing for taking down. After the thing, he wrote to me and said that he wasn't able to come in on the work crew the day after to help to clean up because he had an appointment with a psychiatrist for the 90-day medication and treatment plan review. He felt bad because he wanted to work and he came in the morning. I said, well, I'll tell you, come in the morning with the person, with the truck crew work, and I'll come in the morning and pick you up and take you to Woodburn to the group home where you live. And that way you can work and earn some money, and you'll be back in plenty of time for your appointment. It's short that I picked him up at noon. He got in the car, and I thanked him for this nice presentation he'd given at the banquet. And he said, well, he said, I really was serious about it. I really appreciate what you did. He says, it's the first time in my life in your program that I felt like I was a real person. And at first, I felt sad that he was a man 30 years in the mental health program, most of it in the state hospital and community programs. I had not been in any kind of culture that reinforced his value as a person. And I think this is a core issue in the state hospital and in the whole mental health system. What we're talking about is really having a therapeutic milieu on which affirms the value of the person. You noticed when I talked about, I said that I worked with persons with mental illness. I'm not one for political correctness. I think it's overdone, but I think in this case it's important to how we refer, because our language forms how we see a person and also our attitude and how we relate to the person. The mentally ill person, mentally ill is an attribute of the person, that somehow mental illness devalues the person. And whatever they say or has to contribute is kind of corrupted by their illness. And what I'm saying is that at the hospital we need a culture that enforces, reinforces the value of the person there. Dr. Gould, who developed the theory behind the transactional analysis, talks about the quality of relationships between people, the interaction going on. His theory was popularized by Harris's book, I'm Okay, You're Okay, without getting all the different ego states he talked about, and simply put that there tends to be anything what we would call the human service transaction of the relationship with the provider being a rescuer and the person receiving the service being a victim, kind of meaning they're powerless.
Could I ask you to conclude, please? Thank you. Could I ask you to conclude, please? I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Go ahead, please.
And what we're talking about is a program. In the early 1980s, Tom Peters published a book called In Search of Excellence, where he studied different organizations considered to be excellent and identified principles they have in common. And I'm suggesting that in looking at not just meeting the criticisms from the federal government, that we have a proactive kind of, not a reactive kind of process, that we look at creating a program of excellence in the hospital, like a lot of companies have done. That the hospital be a center for excellence for the rest of the mental health system in the state. I do the budget at the hospital for treatment and rehabilitation and presented.
Sir, can I ask you to conclude, please?
You
have to be fair, please.
And there is a problem in the state with our taxpayers, and we need to educate the public about the people and what their needs are, and that they need to be open to these people. They're not a burden on the community, as someone you know said. And that's part of the excellence and part of the relationship. We need an I'm okay, you're okay kind of relationship. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Questions, comments? Thank you for your testimony. Randy Witterbush, please. Mary, do you want Mark, do you wish to come up with him too? Why don't you both come up? Thank you. Sasha.
Hi, my name's Randy Ritterbush. I currently work for ASPE Council 75, and as part of my assignment, I represent the nurses and the doctors at the state hospital. For the better part of the last 20 years, I've worked in the corrections department and in the department, and also as a rep for the last 10 years. And in switching assignments to the state hospital, it occurs to me that we've done a very good job with the light that we shine in the Department of Corrections and the legislative involvement. And I'm here today not to talk about what you need to put into or the more money you need to give my members or the more staff. You have that in reports. We've been talking about that for a year now. What I'm here to talk to you today about is a conversation I had with Superintendent Orr in a recent labor management meeting with my physicians. During the meeting, the physicians were bringing up several issues, which we do, and we discuss, and they're very cooperative with Mr. Orr, by the way. He looked at me at one point in the meeting and said, "How did we get here?" referring to the state of the hospital. "What happened?" And very much to my surprise, I had an answer for him. And I says, "What's happened is nobody's looked at the state hospital. Your predecessors, our elected officials, for the last several decades have not spent the required time in the hospital, and I don't mean a white glove 10-minute tour of the hospital. I mean spend 4 hours on a ward. Find out what the living conditions, find out what the staff go through for yourselves. I truly believe if your predecessors would have taken the time to actually find out what the hospital's like, which I have and Mary have recently. Recently we took Mary to the hospital and she got to see the sterilization equipment that looks like it came off of a World War II boat. Truthfully, that's what they tell me. I can't say that's true. But we looked at an x-ray machine that you cannot buy parts for. The poor x-ray tech has to surf the website to find what they call medical stores or whatever for parts that they're selling off to keep the equipment running. There's an eye examination machine that still has a glass bulb on it that reflects light and magnifies the light. You folks, if you would see the conditions in the hospital, we wouldn't be here today. You wouldn't have to do that. We wouldn't be putting these millions and millions of dollars. The programs would have been there for years. Mary and I were lucky enough or unlucky enough to be on one of the geriatric wards that day when an elderly gentleman tried to get in bed with one of the female residents. Needless to say, she wasn't very happy about it. There's 28 patients on this ward. And it was amazing to watch the three staff members not only control the gentleman, another staff member had to keep the lady under control because she, of course, was upset. And I'm not sure if she was yelling or trying to protect the gentleman. We couldn't really tell. The other patients on the ward were agitated, needless to say. Coming up to Mary and I in the nurse's bubble, this is the area where they work, trying to get us to get them juices and things, and that took away from what was happening with the nurses on the MHTs on the ward trying to control the situation. It was nothing short of amazing. You folks have to spend the time in the hospital and see what's going on so you could really give the state of Oregon and yourselves and the people that work there and the people that live there a chance for a hospital that will give them a chance to go out into society and succeed. I know that each and every one of you have the same goal as we all do, and which is for everybody to succeed and for the hospital to be a place that all Oregonians are proud of. And I implore you and I beg you to come out and spend this quality time. There are nurses, there are doctors, there are MHTs that would give you a real tour. Take off your suits and come be part of the hospital and really find out what's going on, and then we can really move forward. There's two and a half years before we have a new facility. People are living, breathing, working, and yes, dying there. We need to take a close look at it and do something about it on a day-to-day basis. And you folks can help us by being there. And I'd like to thank you very much for the time to... I know it's a different type of speech from a union rep, but that's how I felt that day, and I felt very compelled to tell you that.
Thank you, Mary. Before I ask for if there are any questions, I'd like to go to Mary, and then when she completes her testimony, if there's any questions, please feel free to ask them. Mary, why don't you?
I have absolutely nothing to add to what Randy said. Right. I'm here to help answer questions if you need me, and I would just implore you to do the same thing that Randy said. Come on out and spend. Don't come out as a state rep. Just come out as a person. Don't come into the wards as an elected official. Just come out as a person in the ward and spend two or three hours in the wards with our members and watch the interactions of the clients. And I have to say, I had not seen an autoclave like they use to sterilize equipment since I was a small child in a dental office. I mean, it is incredible the antiquated equipment that the medical professionals are expected to use in a modern-day medical field. I mean, it's just astounding to me.
Right. Could you now tell us who you are since you said... I'm sorry to do that because I didn't think you were going to say anything.
I wasn't
going to
say anything. I was compelled.
You want to say more? Go ahead, please.
You just need to come out and take a look at this.
Okay.
X-ray equipment that is from the 40s.
CAT scans that are from the 50s.
Okay. Questions? Representative Klim, please.
First of all, you've ruined something here for me because I was scheduled to do a job shadow already, so now it's going to look like I just did it because you came and challenged me here. But I was scheduled for last Friday. Friday. It was supposed to be last Friday. But I guess here's my question. Because different people make their decisions differently, and for me it's about I need to kind of feel the environment involved. But on an ongoing basis, with the same exact need for me to be at a mobile home park, talking about their closure the next day and somewhere else the next day, what about this idea of a board of directors that also is embedded on an ongoing basis that was talked about in the opening sentence? Because, you know, in the very beginning, Senator Courtney talked about, I can't live there, I can't be out there all the time, so is that one visit going to really be enough, or do you need an ongoing sort of commission or board of directors that has, you know, has a different view of the hospital than someone who works there or is management there? Because they're an independent oversight body, essentially.
Well, you know, personally, I think we add and we add and we add and we add layers. In that same meeting, we were talking about how decisions were made, and the physicians and the nurses, and I'm sure the MHTs, feel like they really aren't part of what's going on in the hospital, the change in the hospital. And I explained it to Mr. Orr this way. There's four steps in making a decision. There's you gather information. The hospital did a great job of getting input from all of the stakeholders, the physicians, the doctor, everybody. Great job. Well, the second stage is analyzing that equipment. They didn't include anybody. The third step is making those decisions. Again, nobody's included. Well, the fourth step is implementing. All of a sudden, we're implementing those decisions and being told, you have input. Well, those don't have... The input didn't go through. It was lost in those two stages. People that didn't understand make decisions and aren't living on the floors and the wards. If we add another committee, an oversight committee, I just hope they talk to the right people and include the right people in the decision making. I don't care how many processes we add and how many layers we make and how many oversight committees we have. Until we get in there and find out what's really going on for ourselves, like you just said, I don't think you can. I don't care how many layers you have.
Representative Plame, are you okay?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my experience having served on a commission is if the commissioners are engaged, because that's their only task, then they can be far more engaged. And then legislators view commissioners a little bit differently than management or employees because they have no financial interest, they've got no career interest, they've got, I'm assigned to be responsible as this, your eyes down on a state agency sort of interest. But it could not work as well. I hear your point.
Right.
I just think it's, you know, your point is well taken. It depends on what their focus is if you add it in.
Right, and who they focus on listening to.
Yeah.
And can I just add one thing? Mr. Chair, Representative Clem, I think it's great that you're coming out and doing a job shadow. I think that's really important.
You don't know.
You and Senator Courtney are two people. And we're sort of suggesting that it takes more than just the two of you to fund. I mean, you're talking about changing the direction of a very large functioning organization with a lot of human lives at stake. And you're going to need a lot of support to get that done. And we're just suggesting that we might like to see more than just the two of you.
Well, that's in my district, too. We need some people who don't drive past it every day and represent the people in there as well.
Representative Jensen, please.
Thank you, Senator Courtney. I get
have a question, but I think we kind of need to wait until the hospital superintendent or folks from the agency are there. My question will have in front of us. I like the idea of having people, you know, come out and get a deeper appreciation of what's going on. I think that's very important, and I realize that many of the people in the legislature have little, and in some cases, no understanding of this. But I have a question that I want to pose to Mr. Orr and perhaps some of the others relating to confidentiality. When we get into this arena. You know, I was about to propose that the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate, you know, take 2 or 3 days out of every legislator's time during the next session and put them on staff out at the state hospital. But I think that presents, you know, these wild ideas present some other types of problems, and I would like to get the response from the agency to this question when they come forward.
All right, please remember that, because we are scheduled at the conclusion, the fourth quarter, to hear from Superintendent Orr, as well as Mickey Logan, and I want to put the Judge Jim Hargrave, on notice. I'd like you also to come up. You weren't scheduled. I'm not trying to set you up, but I would like at least to be here, and I'd like Dr. Goldberg to return, too. So, again, I would like to put, not to mess you up, but I would hope you'd be willing to accommodate the good superintendent and the good heavyweight counsel who relies on Mickey Logan, who we're anxious to hear from, too. So, if you would, Representative Jensen, we can do that when we get through this. Okay. I also want to welcome the good Senator Mark Carter. She just finished teaching her class, Race Down the Highway, in her magnificent, expensive black Cadillac. So I am happy that she's here, and I appreciate her joining me. I don't feel so alone in the sense that. Randy, can I just say something? I have to tell you, and I'm not saying you're wrong with your suggestion, but every member of this committee wanted to be on this committee. I mean, I appointed the senators, and I'll tell you, they wanted to be here. And we're talking John Days, Ted Ferrioli's, Portland's Margaret Carter, Salem's Jackie Winters. They wanted to be here, and I know the Speaker and all the House members, nobody was dragged kicking screaming. They wanted to be here. They care. And I do want to say this. If you go back to 2004, when certain things happened up to this point, I have to say the legislature, Democrat and Republican alike, and February was another example of it. Every time that we've been in a situation to ask for, I have to tell you, more money or staff or whatever, this legislature, since at least 2004, and I know it's late, I want you to understand it has been there. So I want to speak proudly of my fellow legislators in the House and the Senate. I think a significant interest in the part of the legislature to really, really do something, not only at that hospital, but also statewide. And I mean that. And I'm not denying the fact that I've been out there. I've not been out there quite like, I haven't lived out there, but I've been out there enough to say it's very emotional. So I respect what you're saying, but I did have to speak on behalf of my colleagues here, as well as the members that are on this task force.
And I understand it, and I'm not trying to say that you are, that you don't care. And I do understand that this legislature, and most legislatures, have given the hospital what the final budget requests are. But, sir, you and I both know that it goes through 5 or 6 revisions before it even gets to you. And a lot of what they needed was cut before you even got a chance to look at it, because there's only so many dollars. Mm-hmm. And the mentally ill have never been a priority in this state, and we need to make them a priority. And that is all I'm saying.
I agree with the priority statement, but I can tell you nothing was cut in February. Okay. Further questions or comments? Thank you very much. I hope you'll stick around so we can hear from the good superintendent, the good judge, the good director, and the good attorney. Okay, let me make sure. Megan Cohey, is that? I don't know. I'm so afraid I'm going to say it wrong and they'll be in trouble. Megan, you want to come up, please, and speak with us? Again, put your name on the record. I hate to do that, but then if somebody doesn't, then I have to interrupt them, then I feel like I've been rude. Because my parents told me never to interrupt anybody. But, you know?
I'm Megan Cahey.
Cahey.
I'm Vice President of Mental Health America of Oregon, formerly the Mental Health Association of Oregon. And I want to thank you all, co-chairs and members of the committee, for this opportunity to testify. First, I want to start out commending Dr. Goldberg for his opening comments and for his swift movement in helping start the create the oversight board. And I think that that's an excellent idea. And as part of the coalition of advocacy groups, we heartily support this creation of an oversight board. So today I would like to raise some issues. The four issues I'd like to highlight. First, previous testimony has stated that the state has hired two clinical experts, Dr. Geller and Dr. McLaughlin, to advise the state hospital on treatment design and clinical issues. And while I commend the state for hiring national expertise, this committee and the public deserve to have access to any and all information and recommendations provided by clinical experts. And so in the interest of transparency that has been promised to the committee and to the community, I would ask that these documents be provided to the committee and the community and clearly posted on the web within 2 weeks. Next, it has been brought to our attention that the state has been planning a new treatment model as a necessary prerequisite for the developing building plans. It would be extremely useful to the committee and the community to understand the proposed treatment model and how this model addresses the key clinical issues raised by the Center for Medicaid Services and the Department of Justice CRIPA reports. In the interest of serving persons who live with serious mental illnesses, or as we like to say, mental health challenges, we would like to see a copy of this treatment model, and we ask that this model be posted on the web within 2 weeks. Next, we have all been troubled by the anonymous cremains of persons whose lives ended at the Oregon State Hospital. And, of course, this is not a path we want to repeat. Over the years, people who use mental health services and families who and their families have reminded us that our goal is recovery and full community reintegration. So we ask, how does the proposed footprint drawings for the new state hospital emphasize community reintegration? And we ask to see, please, 3 other models that facilitate community integration, such as the Toronto model with dispersed community-based capacity. Finally, given the extensive findings, given inadequate care, we commend the Department of Human Services and the hospital for putting clinical models first and foremost. And at the same time, given the wide range of clinical needs of the patient populations at the Oregon State Hospital, we would like to ask, could the clinical care be better provided in a range of facilities? So those are the 4 points that I bring before the committee and before this hearing. And just speaking from the heart, I would like to make the observation that this is not an us and them situation. We are in our various roles as advocates, as patients, as hospital administrators, as legislators, as workers, as concerned community members, and yet we are all the same people, and we all want happiness, health, well-being for ourselves and for each other, and we are all on the same side on this. We all want the same thing, and so we are all together on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Megan. And I did notice the key administrators in the back taking notes over your 4 points. So, sure, I just don't get the question. Sure. Senator Carter, would you wish to ask a question?
Could you explain what you meant by the integration model? I know you referenced the Canadian model. Does the integration of services here include what?
We ask that. My understanding of community integration has to do, and I must say that I don't have a very sophisticated understanding of this, Senator Carter, so I may need to get back to you on this with a better understanding, if I may. But, and some people may speak more eloquently of this, but to me, community integration has to do with people being in the community rather than being sequestered in a hospital facility. So smaller modules where people are actually in the community more, like where people are in smaller facilities. The our state of Oregon is doing this somewhat already with community-based facilities,
okay,
in a smaller degree.
Gotcha.
We need more of this rather than one big, gigantic hospital or two big, gigantic hospitals.
Okay.
More smaller things.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much, Megan. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our next witness will be David Rompre, be followed by Bob Jundep. And right now, in terms of what's on the... Please come forward. On our sign-up list, Bob is the last witness who signed up. I only say that for purposes of others that may want to sign up. As you know, when we're finished with the public testimony part of our agenda, we will go to the informational meeting where we will hear from Council Mickey Logan and officially from Roy Orr, the new superintendent. But I've also asked the good Judge Hargraves, who is the special master, to be available, as well as to hear once again from Dr. Goldberg, should they choose to make further comments or we have further questions. So, again, so at this moment, these are the last two who have signed up. We have if others care to speak, then please feel free to sign up. Okay. David, you would like to go first, please. Identify yourself, even though I've already called your name, and then we'll hear from you, Bob. Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair and Committee, thank you. My name is David Rompre, and I am a peer support project developer for 12 Oregon counties, not all at once, Greater Oregon Behavioral Health Care. And 10 of them are Eastern Oregon, and 2 are to the left, or the west, Clatsop and Columbia. I'm also on the Planning and Management Advisory Council and the Hospital Community Work Group that some of these fine folks are on, and also the Seclusion and Restraint Committee. So we review every single seclusion restraint incident paperwork, try to get meaning out of it. I've been doing that for a couple of years. I will be brief. I know I don't like to keep a good attorney waiting. but
you're talking about me?
Well, yes, in fact, I am, actually.
Yeah,
I'm not politically... You know,
go ahead. I'm sorry. That was rude. I just
no. I am, of course, talking about each and every one of you. I may be crazy, but I'm not a political idiot. I am diagnosed, and I have been. And my father and brother were also, and I was for too many months in 1990 an inpatient at the Oregon State Hospital forensic wards. And my brother was a civil commit there, in the late 90s, and then the early 2000 was at 370, so he was waiting for trial for all of the manic depressive men in my family, including myself, got into mischief when we were without medications and on the streets in manic. My father was a Danish in 1986, civil commitment. But before that, in high school, I was an honor society member, had AP advanced placement English, sports editor for my school paper, Quillen Scroll Society, set school records in the mile and 2 mile. Before I came into Oregon to be a public mental health client, I was already by then a 3-year veteran of the Army. I was on the All-Army track team. I ran a mile in 4 minutes, 11 seconds. Didn't have a criminal record. And then I needed an attorney because I ended up in being manic and getting into trouble. I say this to say, well, let me interject real quickly that, okay, so I had a lot of things going for me. I had 2 years of college before I came in to the hospital, finished college when I came out. But I could just as well be someone who did well at Les Schwab or worked at Burger King or whatever and didn't have a criminal record and ended up in the state hospital too. And I could be a woman or I could have a lot of weight challenges, et cetera. It doesn't matter. There are great people over there. The Cripper Report says, I think, about 5 things. Get them out. It's a constitutional right unless you can prove that it's not because of safety. The Cripper Report talks about staff shortages. That's been very well addressed by the unions that have come in here. Very important. It talks about conditions, poor conditions, and also seclusion and restraint issues. I would just have one question rhetorically for all of us, and then it was brought up by Randy. Excuse me, Randy. Randy's comments when he said, "So you give us the money that we need." I'm paraphrasing. I'm sorry. You give us the money that we need, et cetera, and then we give people a chance to get out. My question is, do people believe they can do it? Do the people in there believe they can make it out there like I did and other people do? I suggest you use peer support. AA, NA have used it. Mental health system is finally coming around. It's an evidence-based practice. The state hospital is hiring peer support specialist positions. And with that, you can also bring up, they're planning on bringing up self-care and wellness. So people can look at the conditions around them and say, I don't like these conditions. They're unsafe. I want to do something about it. So self-determination and the use of behavior support plans that are coming aboard will help with seclusion and restraint issues. So I think there's some good things in place. People need to believe they can do it. So peer support is going to be vital. And I don't care what kind of building it ends up being. We have to deal with the reality. Community integration matters about what happens on the inside. And I support the plan as it is because that's what we have. Let's change the way the work is done inside. Bob, I yield the rest of my life to you. I mean, I'm rendering my time to you.
And again, thank you, David. If I'd have Bob testify, and then we can ask questions if you'd be willing to refrain. Please.
Chairs Rosenbaum and Courtney, my name is Bob Jundeff. I'm the director of Oregon Advocacy Center. And just so you know, we've actually just changed our name, but haven't changed our letterhead yet. We're now Disability Rights Oregon, and hopefully we'll have a letterhead soon. But in the meantime, I'm here to speak on behalf of our organization as well as Mental Health America of Oregon and NAMI Oregon. We're advocates who have been working together in coalition to monitor hospital conditions and to work with folks from DHS and at OSH to do what we can to help progress in terms of improving the institution. My message today is very simple, is that we believe that this legislature, this committee, this governor should do whatever it takes to support our new superintendent, Wright Orr, to get the job done. We've met with Mr. Orr, met with Special Master Hargreaves, and we're convinced that they understand what the problem is. They're getting a good handle on what needs to be done in order to solve the problem. but they're going to need everyone's support in order to get that job done. One of the ways that we can support them, I believe, and our advocates believe, is to create a board of directors or council that assists the superintendent, the staff, and management to make these changes. The concept is really pretty simple. Rather than being something that would be designed to limit conversation and communication, the idea is that if we can attract good people who can have the expertise in terms of management, for health care, consumers, families, and staff, who can bring the various perspectives to the table, and have the responsibility to follow the complexity of change that's necessary at the hospital and to report to you and other policymakers in an understandable and accurate fashion as to what is needed in order to make these changes. We think that would really move us ahead. We also believe that we need to continue to be committed to the creation of the new hospital. This is a clear goal. And the process of transformation of the culture of the institution and the type of care that's provided needs that goalpost, if you will, to reach in order to be able to have the type of institution that we can all be proud of. Even though David has ceded me his life, and I'm not quite sure what to do with it, so I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Okay. Questions?
Protecting people like a dog.
Questions, comments, or anyone? Sure.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Sure. Chair Rosenbaum.
Bob, I know that you say in your written testimony that though you've met with the new superintendent, that you haven't really seen written documents yet that are showing the detailed plans for improvement in the hospital. But because we're about to hear, I think, from the people that are responsible for those things, I would just ask you, what if you were in our position, what would you be looking for? And because one of the things that I think is tough in these situations is that necessarily a lot of effort goes into starting to actually put down on paper what's going on in a way that it hasn't been done previously, but obviously just describing the problem on paper and continuing to do that doesn't fix it. So if you were not an expert and not somebody who could possibly spend your life in the hospital, how would you go about evaluating and, I guess, trying to monitor the changes that are being made in advance of the actual physical facility being replaced?
Sure.
Now, that's a really open-ended question, which shows I didn't go to law school. But
the burden of a legal education is a heavy one. I think it's it's not rocket science in my mind. I know enough to know that this is a big institution and it's hard to change the course of a large ship. But I also know that management principles, as the director of an organization and with some familiarity with that, is a process of deciding where you're going, deciding how you're going to get there, and having benchmarks to help you judge how you're doing and how you're moving along, and making sure that everybody's on the same page with those. And in my conversations with Superintendent Orr, as I think you will hear, he understands that. He's managed large institutions, and he understands those basic management principles, and he understands in his former job that he has to be able to demonstrate at least to a board of directors or to, in this case, a legislature or a governor that he has a plan, that he has clear benchmarks, and that he's meeting them. The Department of Justice report, I think, sets out the areas where we want to see progress. And part of putting together a package for you is having clear goals that he can report that we have made specific progress in the areas of that report. And so that's the way that I would phrase it. And again, I think one of the benefits of having a board that has some expertise on it is that they can give him a quick a place to go where he can get a quick response in terms of how is he doing, and are there things that he needs in order to face, to address roadblocks that he may be facing, and that that group can turn around and talk to you and others about these challenges as well. So you're not relying upon one person coming in, bringing in a bunch of charts and graphs that we can hardly get through or not really quite understand. We want to have people from various disciplines be able to say, from our perspective, we know where we're going, this is what we're trying to accomplish, and this is how we're doing in getting there.
Thank you.
Any questions? Comments? Representative Tomei, we haven't forgotten you. Still there?
I'm still here.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. I think, okay, now, again, I want to reach out to anyone. That's all those who've signed up. Does anybody else wish to come and testify before us now, before we go into the next segment of our meeting? You can do it. Just because you didn't testify, sign up, doesn't mean you can't come forward. Okay, we're going to go to the informational part of the meeting, and this is gets very interesting. I would like to ask Council Mickey Logan to come forward, please.
I think I'd like to be called good attorney from now on.
Good attorney. I'm starting to get...
That's better than heavyweight.
Yeah, there's been references to attorneys and to law school that got me really emotionally really shattered right now. You and I don't know what it is. I'm feeling pretty bad about myself. Can you help me? Because I don't...
Listen, good attorney is as good as it gets for an attorney.
Okay.
So
I look forward...
You're really pushing you're challenging us to not start making lawyer jokes or talking about the oxymoron involved in the phrase good attorney.
Yeah, that's
I'm not sure I can resist the temptation.
I got your back, Mickey, I'm going to tell you. You got mine, so
hey,
two of us. Okay, but Council Logan, I look forward to your testimony. Oh, I do, because I believe you're the individual who's dealing with the feds. At least I don't mean to set you up, but I believe that was, we heard from you some time ago. You're good enough to come and speak to us on January 11th, and I think one of your remarks was, I could be wrong, Counsel, I'm being careful, this is attorney, I think one of your remarks was the fact that we put ourselves together in a task force that was something the feds were paying attention to, and it was something that, shall I use the word, impressed them to the extent. It doesn't mean it went away or anything, but I remember that. So I am looking forward to hearing how well you think we've done or are doing or whatever you can tell us regarding the feds and your role in this in terms of the state's representative dealing with the federal government.
Thank you, Senator. I hope I can address that adequately. Chair Courtney, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, I am Mickey Logan. I'm a Senior Assistant Attorney General at the Oregon Department of Justice. I provide advice to the Department of Human Services generally, and I'm also the designated contact attorney for the Oregon State Hospital. As Senator Courtney pointed out, I was here in January. You've met me before. As such, I am the state's lead attorney in the dealing with the U.S. DOJ on its investigation of the Oregon State Hospital. And yes, Chair Courtney, I am the only person that the U.S. DOJ communicates with in Oregon who works for the state. I'm sure there are other people in this room they talk to, but I'm the official contact for the state.
I haven't talked to him, just so you know.
No,
I talked to him.
Yeah, I'm not too worried.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would be.
As an Oregon Assistant Attorney General, my statutory role is to provide advice. I don't make policy decisions, and so while I do know a lot about the policy information, it's not my role to develop policy, so I won't be able to answer any questions about policy. I'll defer those questions to the superintendent Dr. Goldberg. I understand that what you want from me today is to give you an update about our status of our communications with the U.S. DOJ. I will provide, as I said to you in January, I'm a lawyer, so I give a lot of caveats and qualifications. And one of those today is that I have to be sensitive in my comments because I don't want to make any, first I want to make any concessions that might have an unintended legal impact, but I also don't want to say anything because the fact of the matter is, every time I get quoted in the press, the chief attorney for the U.S. DOJ calls me and says, aha, you're saying this. So I have to be careful what I'm saying so that we continue to have a really good relationship, because we do. All right, so the issue, as I said in January, as a legal matter, is whether the Oregon State Hospital conditions are so bad that they violate the patient's civil rights. That's the issue that I represent, and that I'm not making any concessions on publicly. The U.S. DOJ report is based, as you know, on its investigation that concluded in November of 2006. We were fortunate then, as I told you in January, to have a good enough relationship when they left on November 16, 2006 to receive an exit interview from them. And that exit interview information was incorporated into the continuous improvement plan that the state hospital was developing then and continues to develop with the input of lots of folks. So as you know, the hospital's been working to improve itself. The reason I tell you this, is, and you're going to hear about that from Superintendent Orr, is that I have been sharing all of that information, the information you provided me, the information the hospital has, all of that to the USDOJ lead attorney since November 2006, although there was a long period of time where we didn't hear anything from them, although I continued to send them information. After they issued their report, I went ahead and invited the USDOJ lead attorney to come out to Oregon to see how conditions are now and to meet with us and talk about hopefully settling the case, quite to put it bluntly. And we were fortunate. They accepted our invitation. I'm not here today to tell you we've settled it, so don't get too excited. But we were very happy to have them come out. The lead attorney for the USDOJ on this case came out with a colleague of his, and the two of them met with myself, the superintendent, the deputy superintendent, and the special master, and our consultants on April 8th, April 9th, and April 10th at my office. Our discussions during those days did confirm that there's a significant alignment between what the USDOJ believes that the Oregon State Hospital should be doing and what the hospital is actually doing and planning to do. So there's a lot of agreement. The attorneys we met with took all the information we put together and provided and all of those discussions back with them on April 9th when they left, and we've heard nothing since then. And that isn't surprising to us because we didn't hear anything from them between November 16, 2006 and January 9, 2008. They have a lot of layers they have to go through before they can communicate in various ways. So we didn't expect to hear from them for any time. So we're in substantial agreement. There were two issues that we did not agree on. And I'm guessing, I don't know, but I think it's a reasonable guess, that those two issues are part of the reason that it's going up the chain at the USDOJ to sort of figure out what to do with us and what their options are. The first issue is that the USDOJ prefers to resolve, if they resolve cases and they don't take cases to litigation, they prefer to resolve them with consent decrees. And we told them we would be happy to sign any agreement, but we would not agree to just go into a consent decree. Now, I apologize if you don't want me to tell you what a consent decree is, but I thought it might be useful. Consent decree is essentially a court-ordered agreement. So you have a court overseeing an agreement between two parties in enforcing the agreement. That's basically what it is. The problem that we see with a consent decree, we see a myriad of problems with it. A consent decree also basically allows the court or the judicial branch of the government to take precedence, if you will, over the legislative branch and over the agency branch. We basically, the other states that have been under consent decrees have found themselves doing a lot more, oftentimes, than what they initially agreed to. In fact, that's very, very common. And since in this case we've agreed that we would do everything pretty much that the USDOJ wants us to do, and I'm not being disingenuous when I say that. We really are in substantial agreement about what we need to do. We don't see the advantage of having a court order that basically said, where we would have to concede that we had actually violated people's civil rights, because we don't concede that. We prefer, if they want to get those kind of findings, they may as well just go ahead and sue us and prove their case, because, and I didn't, I'm not going to talk ad nauseum about this, but suffice to say, I believe, they would not be able to prove all of the findings from November of 2006. Today, they would not be able to prove all of those things. So it would be rather foolish for the state of Oregon to concede all of those things when we believe the conditions have at least changed somewhat. Not, that's not to say they don't need substantial improvement still. That's not to say that we're anywhere where we need to be. But nevertheless, that's why we wouldn't agree to a consent decree. Now, before I came up, I was asked by someone back there, I was told that it would be useful for you to receive some information about how a settlement agreement that we signed that wouldn't be a court order might be enforceable. And it would be, but first of all, I want to tell you that that's happened before. This isn't an unprecedented, wild idea. The U.S. DOJ has actually done a signed agreement like I'm describing in Vermont, North Carolina, West Virginia, Tennessee, Texas, and several other states. This isn't like Oregon's out there on a limb doing something totally unheard of by suggesting we simply sign an agreement. It would be binding in the same way that an agreement between the state of Oregon and Multnomah County is enforceable. There are all sorts of agreements between state agencies and Multnomah County, Clackamas County, Umatilla County, and various other local governments. It's basically a contract. And what we told, and with all sincerity, the U.S. DOJ attorney, is that you have a contract. If one of the parties to the contract doesn't do what they said they would do, you go to a court, and the court makes them do it. That's how a contract works. And you don't have to prove under contract that there was a violation of civil rights. You just have to prove that the party said they would implement such and such treatment plan or have such and such staffing or whatever they said they would do, and that they're not doing it. That's how a contract works. And it would be a contract law, a state action rather than a federal action. They could probably find a way to get it into a federal action, but that would be tough, I think. But it would still be able to be go in front of a judge and be enforced. But the advantage to Oregon is we could be told by the judge to do what we said we'd do under the contract, but the judge couldn't, as they would with a consent decree, order us to do more than what we said we would do. So that was a fundamental difference when we met with them in April. Consent decree or contract. The other difference is the other issue that we had with them.
Yes. Could I get a clarification?
Please.
Oh, certainly.
For a second. We're talking about other states, we're talking about a contract, we're talking about consent decrees. Now, am I to understand that other states have entered into consent decrees with the feds? And am I to also understand that other states have entered into this contract types of relationship that you're referring to with other the Fed?
Co-chair is Representative Jensen, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I will add, you might recall when I was here in January, I spoke briefly about the fact that I am fortunate to be a member of the vice president of an organization made up of my counterparts in all the various states. In other words, the contract attorneys from for the states who represent the state hospitals. And I can say with great confidence that those attorneys who speak for the states that enter consent decrees regret it.
Thank you.
So the other issue, that the remaining issue we had with the U.S. DOJ was, as you recall, one of their findings was, a lot of their findings were about community placement issues. Not surprisingly, the U.S. DOJ wanted us to agree in our whatever we come up with, that we would resolve those community placement issues. And we couldn't agree to that. We couldn't agree to that because the state hospital doesn't have control or authority to resolve those community placement issues. So it would be, we felt it would be disingenuous to promise to resolve something we did not think we had the authority to resolve. And the other major reason we didn't agree to that is that the U.S. DOJ's investigation was under the under CRIPA, which is the Civil Rights of Institutionalized Persons Act. And we didn't believe their jurisdiction over institutionalized persons extends to community placement. And that's not a stretch. That's not a... It is about institutionalized persons. That's what their jurisdiction in this particular investigation is about. It's not to say that they couldn't find another way under another law to pursue that issue, but this particular case is about the institution. So we didn't agree to that particular issue. And those were the two things we didn't agree about. So we are now in waiting mode. We've worked out a lot of details. I anticipate that we will hear back from them. I mean, they will get back to us eventually. It will probably be some time. But when they do, I anticipate they'll probably have a counterproposal with, about some of the issues and details. I don't know what it will be. But I don't think we're going to resolve this quickly. But those are the two sticking points, and my guess is as good as yours how those might impact things. They're certainly considering their options. But the information that they have at this point, again, is from November 2006.
Okay, Council, so let me ask, the two consent areas were, or are?
The two
consent decree areas are?
Well, they're not consent decree areas. The two issues that we disagree with the U.S. DOJ about are, one, whether the agreement should be a consent decree or simply a written agreement. That was one of the things we disagree on.
All right.
And the second thing we disagree on is they want us to promise to resolve the community placement issues.
All right.
And as much as we completely agree that those are significant issues and should be resolved, we don't think we can promise to resolve those.
Right. Turn it over. Let me ask another question. So tell me the alternative options that are out there for us.
For us?
Whatever. You listed them. If it's been a while, these are the things that can happen. The worst case scenario, simply list them so I can go back and refresh my memory of where we're at in terms of what can happen in view of since they issued the November 6th or whatever it was, CRIPA report. What's the worst to the best?
Okay. The worst is that the U.S. DOJ could sue us. They could file a lawsuit,
okay.
and within that, we could either prevail, and they won't be able to prove that the conditions. If they prevail, then they would get a court order that would be similar to the consent decree, probably, that they want right now.
So a federal court takes over the system?
The federal court would take over, yes.
Enter the decree, and if we don't comply with that, what? Sanctions. There could be.
Could be money. Probably would be lots of financial sanctions and
fines, penalties. People usually associate with fines and penalties, sanctions.
Yeah, exactly.
They did that in Hawaii. Is that what they did?
They did in Hawaii. They did that in California. They've done that lots of states, and it's cost millions and millions of dollars.
Anything else they could do? Then we'll go to the next thing. I'm just kidding. Anything else that's our sanction?
Well, short of that's if they sue us.
I understand.
Yeah.
That's the worst case. They could sue us and they win. Then they come down with a flood of sanctions, right?
And they could require us it could be like sanctions every day until we do all the things they say we would do. So they could order, along with the sanctions, there would be the court's order, probably with the help of a special master who would help the court tell the hospital in the state of Oregon what it needs to do to fix itself.
Okay. The next thing, short of that,
would be they'd sue us and we'd prevail,
so the other things that we can do short of that?
Well, are what I'm suggesting, some sort of written agreement where we promise to do certain things. Theoretically, we'd get to this end of the spectrum and they wouldn't do anything and they'd drop the whole case. That's not going to happen.
Okay, that's what I need to know. The best case, they drop everything. You're telling us that's not going to happen.
That is not going to happen.
Because they don't like us?
No, because I think that everybody would be speechless to say that there don't need to be improvements at the state hospital.
Well, what I'm saying is, you know, I'm assuming they wouldn't say that until we're down the road. They never get to the point they say, we're dropping everything in view of, because we're all working, we're going to find out. I'm not going to argue with people about how much we've accomplished, because we're a long way to go. But we are, assume we're making improvements. Do they reach the day they say, okay, we drop everything, is that out there one day?
If that were to happen, probably be many years from now.
Okay. I just wondered about this issue, which I guess everybody assumes.
I've never heard of that happening.
You've never heard of that?
I've never heard of the US DOJ just fading away in any state.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. So, all right, assuming they never fade away, what is the best we can hope for if we make the improvements? What is the best we can hope from this group that never fades away?
Probably something like what they had in North Carolina and in what they currently have in Vermont.
Okay.
Which is that we continue to operate under this contract that I described, and they basically monitor us through people that we choose to have monitor us and that they agree to.
And so right now, as of today, well, I'm going to stop here because I could go on and off. I know you're getting tired of hearing from the attorney. They haven't decided what they're going to do with us.
That's absolutely correct.
And they're totally silent.
That's absolutely correct.
And we got to sit there and wait for their silence.
That's absolutely correct.
And if I invite them to come here, they won't come here and talk to me, will they?
They might. I don't know.
I get nothing out of them.
I think it's highly unlikely they would come out and meet with you, but they might. I mean,
in front of the committee.
I could ask them for you if you'd like me to.
Well, the only thing I'm trying to figure out, frustrating me, is this committee, I do think, has been working hard since January 11th. We've done a lot of things. We're trying, but I get the feeling, listen, you don't take this personally, like, what are we thinking? What's going on? How close are we either to this lawsuit or to the written agreement or to we'll go away? I just don't know.
I have co-chairs, representatives of the committee, let me...
But you see, there are court dates in our lives, as you know, where it forces a settlement. We don't even have a court date.
Right. I think I can say with some confidence without... violating the trust of the USDOJ, that if they felt we weren't taking enough action, we would have been sued a long time ago.
Okay. Thank you. All right, now it's everyone else's turn. I didn't mean to dominate. I just had to get some things cleared up in my own mind. Representative Tom, please.
On the second point you raised, the area of disagreement, community placement, I'm just trying to understand exactly sort of what their theory is. So is it something like, we think part of the problem with your institutionalized people is, for example, places they might go cherry pick, so they never get out, so there's huge waiting lists. So therefore, we also think we get to control the community placement site in order to guarantee there's places for them to go. And our position is more like, now that is one treatment modality or option is community placement. There's also more institutionalization as well until release, and that's really up to us and our decision on how we're going to do it, or why are we feeling like there's not a point of engagement with them on that?
Co-chairs and members of the committee, Representative Clem, if your question is... why wouldn't we agree to the community placement issue? Is that what you're asking? Or are you asking why is it so important to the USDOJ? I sort of need to clarify.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand where they think their jurisdiction over those people lie.
I certainly have spoken with them a lot about this issue because I'm trying to understand it myself. And I know that what the USDOJ attorney has said is, and quite accurately, is in the mental health system, it's all about a continuum of care. You can't view anything in isolation. Even though the laws deal with things in isolation, the reality is a continuum of care. And the USDOJ perceives, probably correctly, that the patients at the state hospital, just as you said, are being negatively impacted by their inability to get out of the hospital. And so, yes, I think that you stated it quite well, that is their theory. I think what you're also asking me is what would a court think of that theory, and I don't think that would fly very far with court. But that's just my opinion, and certainly 10 different judges could all rule completely differently.
Ms. Pauline?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I guess I ask is we have conversations as legislators about what our different priorities are going to be, one of which is, okay, we need to really fund the state hospital rebuilding project. Another one is, while we only put $9 million into community placement, we just put $500 million into one building, yet the populations in the community are supposed to be the same as in the building by the time this hits 2020. Mm-hmm. So it's handy when I'm in these conversations to say, and the U.S. Department of Justice thinks that they're going to sue us if we don't get the community placement funding up and right, versus just we, you know, believe that's our position. I don't want to get us into a lawsuit just for that purpose, but, you know, I'm trying to understand how to convince my colleagues as well that it's pretty serious business if we don't get the community placement part done simultaneous this huge investment we're making in infrastructure in the building.
Well, the fact of the matter is,
maybe that's my problem since I'm
I have a very good answer for that. The USDOJ can sue us on that issue, just not in this current case. They have a law that would allow them to sue us on that issue. It's just not this law.
Yeah. Oversight Committee number two coming up.
Thank you, Senator Courtney. I'm not, hearing all the discussions here, but I'm not real sure what it is that you can't do that they want to do, whether it's you can't do it because you don't think it's in the best legal interests or of the state, or whether it is something that we don't have statutory authority to do. What's the gulf between the state of Oregon and USDOJ? Now, I understand that this may be an issue that they want to push very hard, and I think, Senator Courtney, I'd appreciate that if I were in their position, because I think we have sometimes failed in the whole area of community placement, and it may be one of the big problem areas for us. As a consequence, they might see this as an extremely critical item. So I'm trying to, and maybe it just takes more meetings before my non-legal mind can work its way through this.
No. Co-chairs, Representative Jensen, you raise a very good point. And I should clarify, I'm not making legal decisions in a vacuum. The decisions about those two points, the consent decree or lack thereof, and community placement, were made by my clients and with from my advice. And So it does involve my legal advice, but I'm not actually telling you what my legal advice is. I'm telling you what the issues were that are decision, although I certainly am good with these decisions. Right? And the second thing is that my clients are the Superintendent of State Hospital and the governor's office and you folks as embodied through the people who I deal with most directly, the special master and the superintendent and Dr. Goldberg. I believe they've made good decisions on behalf of the state. So it's a mixture of not wanting to concede things that we don't have to concede and promise to do things that we won't necessarily be able to do, and also not wanting to be going beyond our authority and promising to do things that we don't have the authority to promise we can do. So it's all of the things you said on that community issue. I can tell you that no other state except Hawaii that I'm aware of has ever agreed in an agreement like this to deal with the community issues. because they all sort of take the same position that I just outlined. I should have said this also. The CRIPA actually requires in the text of the law that the USDOJ, to be able to pursue a lawsuit, has to prove that they were not able to get the state, whomever they're suing, to cooperate with taking steps to fix themselves. They'd have to prove that. And because we are willing to do everything they want us to do, I think they'd have a hard time proving that. We're just not willing to do the community placement issue, which is probably outside their jurisdiction.
Outside our jurisdiction?
Outside their jurisdiction on this case.
I'm going to yield to Representative Clem, but I want to come back here maybe because he seemed to have a pressing question on
that. I have one. I'll defer to Representative Clem because I do want to ask for some advice.
Just to encapsulate this community placement issue, you don't feel that you could tell them that either the Attorney General's office or the Oregon State Hospital could fund all the new incentives that are going to be in place to get communities to take these things, you know, when we're running contrary to a not-in-my-backyard syndrome, including, you know, as you know, my mayor and legislators, including myself, have said, could we do something about release and geographic distribution? You can't figure out or authorize probably the release patterns that occur that then allow someone to go out into the community. You probably can't, maybe the state hospital or DHS could, through its contracting, deal with sort of the cherry picking that says you're going to have to take, you know, a certain amount of folks of all criteria versus just the ones you think you want. But because you can't encumber the legislature to put more money into that fund, because you can't encumber the legislature to do things, you don't want to say, promise them that it will happen for certain. So it's really on us, knowing we could be sued later under a different statute, and really it's a non-issue in this lawsuit because you can't promise something like that anyway.
I can't say it better than that.
Counsel, you call us your client. For purposes of this question, client is the committee and its staff. Do you have any advice for this client? That is, are we doing as much as we can do, or do you think, listen, the committee staff, you need to do this?
I can only answer questions you might have about legal ramifications of things you want to do. It would be inappropriate for me to suggest.
Then I'll ask another way, counsel.
Okay.
The good co-chair and I have discussed making September our last meeting and turning this over to a board of directors. It's come up. You've heard some about this. There's some other group. I don't know what it is. We've talked about it. We don't know, but, you know, because we're not just doing this to do it. Is that a wise move? Do you understand the question?
I do.
I'm trying to set you up.
Because I've been so frank with you, I want to continue to be frank with you. I think it is a wise move. In terms, you're asking me in the context of the USDOJ and their perception, correct?
This would phase itself out and turn itself over. I should just, for this, let me ask the question two ways. So here goes, you and I should not have the council discussions. should this group end its meeting in September, it's worked hard, it's got new staffing, et cetera, et cetera, should it end its role? Should it cease to exist?
Senator Courtney, I can see advantages either way. And I think that it would be fine as long as there was a group that had the expertise to continue to do the kind of work that needs to be done. But it's a policy decision that's really not mine to make. The USDOJ likes expertise. They like it. They like seeing people with expertise.
And this group, is this group considered a group of expertise? And then collectively?
You guys have a lot more expertise than most people.
No, I'm talking about smart. I need to know, and if you can't answer it, or you can't, I truly just say you can't. I'm not trying to be smart. Are we part of expertise as far as this U.S. Department of Justice is concerned? Or if we're not, this new group, would it need to have some legislators on to some extent to keep this lion at bay?
No, I don't think it would have to have legislators on it.
again, I'm not saying what we're going to do. I just really, because we talked about this, and I don't want to make a legal misstep on this. See what I'm saying? Because I can't, I haven't talked to the U.S. Department of Justice, and they're a stealth group for me. That's, thank you for your testimony, but they're a stealth group to some extent. I'm trying to get a figure out where to go. Senator Carter, do you want to ask some questions?
Yeah, I want to ask counsel. Given Oregon's history in terms of us having been in violation even as far back as the 80s, in your judgment, what kind of makeup do you see would be acceptable to DOJ in believing, the U.S. DOJ, in believing that Oregon is serious about taking care of the problems around the state hospital as well as the community mental health system?
They would have to, co-chairs, Senator Carter, they would have to see action, not rhetoric. I'm just quoting verbatim what the U.S. DOJ attorney's answer to my question in that regard. They want to see things done. They want to see the numbers change, the stat, all the issues that the very able witnesses before me testified to, all of those things actually happen. And they're not going to go away in 2008. They're not going to go away in 2009. They're probably not going to go away in 2010. They're going to be monitoring somehow. They will be monitoring what is happening in Oregon to make sure things are actually happening. And that's why when I was answering Senator Courtney's questions about what will the ultimate resolution of this might look like, it will be something in writing that will allow them to continue to monitor to make sure things are happening, are actually happening. That's what they need to see. And that's why they were willing to come out and meet with us, because they saw that things were happening, including the fact that you folks conveyed this committee and are rolling your sleeves up and getting to work. That helped them be willing to come out and meet with us. That's an unusual thing.
Another question.
Sure, go ahead.
In your legal wisdom, do you think that it matters in terms of whether the legislature itself is having meetings of this nature, or that the legislature has appointed a committee that has strong connections to the legislature that will get the job done?
As long as things are actually getting done, I don't think the USDOJ cares.
Thank you.
The good co-chair, Roosevelt, question.
Good, Senator Courtney. And a good attorney.
The reds are just freaking me out today.
Yeah, and I just want to clarify, I guess for my own benefit, you know, to comment on this, but I think one of the things we're talking about ongoing really isn't a legislative or even quasi-legislative committee. At least my understanding has been it's more like a permanent ongoing component of the state hospital,
right?
That would be like a board of a hospital that would could possibly include legislators, but would certainly include people with a lot of other kinds of expertise and commitment to have a continued relationship. But that isn't what I was going to ask you to comment on. So if there were a written agreement as opposed to a consent decree, is that, are the components of that written agreement confidential up until the point that they're agreed to? Or are they, I mean, have we made a proposed written settlement agreement to the federal DOJ at this point, if you can answer that? Or if you can't answer it, just say that's a bad question.
I don't want to be not forthcoming. We have made a written agreement, and the USDOJ has asked that we keep it confidential.
So it is confidential.
And they've asked us to. It was done in anticipation of potential litigation. If they allow us to make it public, we would, but we're trying again to do everything we can to show them, as Senator Carter's pointed out, that they can trust us.
So it sounds like no one gets to look at it until it's agreed to, then, except for the parties. I mean,
that's the way it is with most contracts.
Right.
The special master is obviously communicating with the governor's office, and obviously the superintendent, Dr. Goldberg, and their staff Sure. Sort of making something up and throwing it out there to see if it'll work.
And I'm sure parts of it are components of what we're looking at in other forums, because you obviously
there's nothing in it that would be a surprise to anybody here.
And the length of time, I guess that's the other thing I'm not clear about, is for how long does that agreement have the force of?
It would depend on what the
USDOJ agreed to. And that would be one of the things that spelled out in
just
the
like
agreement.
Any contract.
So can you tell us anything about what the proposed duration of it is?
It would be at least 3 years.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further questions?
I think the senator has answered my or asked my question.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, there were two questions that came up from witnesses. One was from Representative Jensen about confidentiality. Did you want me to address that or not?
Please.
What Representative Jensen asked was in response to the suggestion that folks here at the legislature go to the hospital and spend a fair amount of time there. I don't see a confidentiality problem there. Now, it would be a great suggestion for lots of people to do, but not lots of people can't do it because confidentiality is a very serious issue. So I'm not saying that to say that it's not a problem, but I'm not concerned about it in this context. Now, if you went and you started looking through progress notes, and I'd certainly hope that you would talk to patients and get their permission, because it's the patient's information, it's their rights, it's all about them. But if they're talking to you, they want to talk to you, that's their right. So that's the answer to that question. The other question I heard asked by a witness was about information from Drs. Geller and McLaughlin and why can't it be posted. Did you want me to address that question briefly?
Sure. Please do.
I understand that there's been a lot of talk about Drs. Geller and Dr. McLaughlin. I think it's important that everyone understand that those consultants have their interactions with the hospital and their work for the hospital hasn't been, state agencies hire consultants all the time, and they write these reports, and they go off, and they make recommendations, and that's what they do. That's not what these consultants are doing. These consultants come on a regular basis to the hospital, and they're interacting and working and training the staff. They haven't written any reports. They're not doing it. That's not the way they operate. They're here. They're working. They work. When they're here, they work 10, 12-hour days. They meet with the staff. They meet with the doctors. They meet with the nurses. They meet with the mental health technicians. They meet with the administrators, and they train them. And that's the kind of work they're doing. To the extent that they had given recommendations, and that I've taken notes on those, or anybody's taken notes on those or anything, the fact of the matter is we hired them because we anticipated litigation with the USDOJ. And that could still come. That could be an option that the USDOJ selects. Our hope is
what was that again, please?
The USDOJ could sue us. They could sue us. And the Drs. Geller and McLaughlin are our experts in that litigation. So their contracts require that the information that we do get write down and receive from them, because obviously there are some things they write down for us, but they're not in report. They're not that kind of thing. They are done in anticipation of litigation, and we're going to keep those confidential until and unless we find out we're not going to be sued.
I want to. Oh, Representative Jensen.
I want to go back to the issue of confidentiality and what you're talking about there. And I think one of the concerns I would have is if we go out there and it is known that we are legislators, we create a kind of a false environment. Both in terms of the clients or patients that are there, and also in terms of the staff that are perhaps there. And I'm sure that we would have a lot of people might be wanting to talk to us if they thought we were somebody involved as far as general policy is concerned of the institution. And not that that's necessarily so bad, and not that we wouldn't, you know, but I'm not sure that would really meet the kind of framework that the previous person giving testimony had looked at or was, you know, was talking about.
Co-chairs, Representative Jensen, what I can tell you is that that's of course always true as a legislator. If you were to go in someone's home, or if you were to go into another hospital, and they were aware, that would always be a dynamic that would exist. I truly have the utmost respect and admiration for the patients at the state hospital and the staff there, and I don't believe that they would. I mean, everybody's different, but for the most part, I think you would get a sincere, professional, pretty accurate idea of what life is like at the state hospital if you went. I don't think they would straighten themselves up and brush themselves off and make everything look hunky-dory because you're there. They're real people. This is where they're living. This is their hospital, and I think you'd be astounded.
Yeah, I could.
Sure.
Just like to make one other comment or observation. I do appreciate very much testimony that you've given us and the legal complexities of trying to protect your clients and not and also the difficulty of trying to talk to folks, at least like me, that don't have yours and Senator Courtney's professional training to be able to understand some of this jargon.
I'm not sure I understand it either.
Okay. but the one thing that I'm concerned about, as you were talking about what we can and what we can't do and what, as far as the law was concerned, but the thing that seemed to me to be sometimes missing seemed to me apparently missing is what's the best interest of the patients in this whole thing that's going on between the state of Oregon and USDOJ? I wonder if we get involved in this, and excuse me for the word game, but this game that is being played between all of these parties, if sometimes we don't lose sight of what it is, and if
I appreciate that very, very much. And if you recall, in January, I throughout my testimony in January, I made a particular point that I haven't made today that I think is worth repeating, because it does feel like a game, but it's not a game. And I truly believe, and the people who at the USTOJ, I hope, also believe, that if a court imposes change from the outside onto an organization, it is not an effective or well-received change. And if an organization takes upon itself to change itself and to change its culture and to improve its conditions and embraces the change from the inside, makes its own change, decides for itself what it will change, because it wants to change those things, not because someone is making it change those things, it's a much more long-lasting and effective change. That's the bottom line. I don't believe it's in the best interest of the patients to have a court tell the hospital to change. It's the best thing the hospital could do is to want to change itself, and do that and take control over it.
Okay. I like now to have the Council, you've been wonderful, and I hope we haven't beat you up too much. Could we have the superintendent or come up? I'd like the master Hargrave to come up. And Council, would you mind just, if we had four chairs, I'd like to stand in, but if we don't, I want Bruce Goldberg to come up too. Is that all right? Well, okay. I appreciate that. And what I'd like to do here, even though officially it says the superintendent's going to testify, I hope, Master Hargrave, you're going to be willing to enter some statements into the record, too. Just a statement by me. One of the things I'm a little worried about is that I think that I don't know how much is being said here tonight. Did you know that perhaps we can't know or whatever? But I do think the legislature, which has demonstrated up to now, not only in terms of this group, things have come behind us, the willingness to try to step up. I just live in fear that I'm going to get that phone call that we didn't hire a certain number of nurses by August 1st, and now they're coming for us. And, you know, the June e-board is come and gone. We don't have another e-board until September. I guess I live in that kind of fear. Maybe it's just paranoia because I take very seriously what the good council has told us. And there's so much quiet, it's silence out there. And I, again, I'm aware that there's confidentiality and things, but I do think this group of legislators is one of the, in a general sense, not just specifically, certainly, should be entitled to know as much as you can tell us about what is going on. I recognize the patient thing very much, Representative Jensen, but we're struggling to try to do the best we can. And you just heard, I think counsel made a remarkable statement. She does not think it's in the best interest of patients to turn it over to the court system. That is riveting testimony for me. So let us deal with this thing that we've allowed to get to the situation, and we know that. So with that, Superintendent Orr, thank you for coming tonight. We look forward to your testimony. You've been on board about how many, 10 weeks has it been about, or how long?
About 70 working days.
70 working days. Okay, how about tell us who you are, and then I'm really interested to hear what you have to say after 70 days.
Co-chairs Courtney and Rosenbaum, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to come back and talk with you after almost 3 months. Most of you will recall that I was here for your February meeting, and I was not on the payroll at that time, but I found the opportunity to be here very instructive. I prepared a lot of remarks to make tonight that were based on observations, which I still intend to make. I also made a number of notes to myself as I was listening to previous testimony this evening, and I'm humbled, to say the least, and pleased at some of the supportive comments that were made previously in the short time I've been here. I'm reasonably sure I don't deserve them at this point, but I appreciate them nonetheless, and I'll continue to work toward earning those comments of support. We've heard a lot of critical observations of Oregon State Hospital. I have, and in the media, and in the last.
Excuse me.
My name's Roy Orr, and I'm the superintendent of the Oregon State Hospital.
Thank you.
I thought your introduction did that for me. I apologize. In the course of the two meetings that I have attended, I've not heard anybody defending the past or the present of Oregon State Hospital. I've heard unanimity about the condition and the desire to move forward. And in the spirit of transparency and accountability, is this microphone working?
Margaret Carter says, is it on? Do we know?
It sounds like it's almost down my throat, and it doesn't sound like it's on.
Well, let me try this one.
Okay. Thank you. Is that better?
Better for me.
Is it?
Well,
it's not better indoors, though.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Maybe I'm too close to it. I'm not sure what's going on.
Okay.
Anyway, in the course of the two meetings I have attended, I've not heard anybody defending the past or supporting where the state hospital is, and I hear unanimity about moving forward with a much brighter future. And I am absolutely on board with the idea of Oregon State Hospital being transparent, which I think is a monumental task to try and accomplish in its current configuration. I knew this hospital would be different in many respects from any other hospital that I've worked in the 35 years I've been in the healthcare industry. But I do believe in our current configuration, it's almost impossible to be as transparent and to be as accountable to the public, to peers and to advocates and to Oregonians without the construct that most hospitals are used to and Dr. Goldberg spoke to in his opening comments, and that is the creation of a board. Other states have done this. I'd be pleased to be tasked with the responsibility of researching how other states have pursued that and what that might look like, and having multifaceted group that would participate in that and bring that product back through Dr. Goldberg into this group should you meet again in September, co-chairs, committee members. My immediate concern is is doing an analysis of where we are and less concerned about where we've been and setting a course toward a better future for our patients and our staff. And while it's early in its development, I do have a plan. I want to assure you that it continues in its development. 70 days is barely enough time to get a decent drink out of the fire hydrant that Oregon State Hospital, the volume of activity out there can sometimes feel like. But I would like to share some of those high points with you tonight. Let me say before I get into that, I provided each of you with a packet tonight, which I don't intend to spend time going through. It's a lot of information. Part of me apologizes for that volume of information, but part of me also wants to acknowledge to all of you that this daunting task you've taken on as committee members to try and understand an organization as complex as this is commendable and impossible in the short time we have at these kinds of committee meetings. So I hope the packets that you have will be an opportunity for your staff members to review and for you to review with them, and I would hope for an invitation so I could come and talk to you about some of the messages I heard loudly and clearly in February, which had to do, I think, Senator Carter made comments about metrics, comparisons to national norms and things like that, and there's some graphic information in there. I apologize for how complex they may look, but it's a very good beginning, I think, in that direction, and I would welcome the opportunity to sit down with any of you and go into more detail about the contents of those packets. Number one, I would mention that with respect to this plan, the high points of this plan, we must continue to fill leadership voids that exist at the Oregon State Hospital. I'm pleased to be on board. I was honored to be selected. I intend to be here for some time. But let me point out that in the immediate past 5 years, Oregon State Hospital has had 4 superintendents, all of them part-time or interim.
Part-time?
Part-time or interim designations. In the past 5 years. In the last 9 years, Oregon State Hospital has had 5 chief medical officers, 4 of them interim, and only 1 full-time, and that was some time ago.
What's a chief medical officer?
That's the chief executive of the medical staff.
Okay. I'm just asking. He's a superintendent. You don't mind me just asking.
It's also a person who fulfills a very important state role in terms of determining the governor's fitness for duty.
Again, I'm not trying to mention. I just...
Right. I know of no other hospital. There may be one out there, but I know of no other hospital in the country that has had a leadership void in those 2 critical positions anywhere near that length of time, or has filled them with interim, part-time kinds of roles.
So the Hassam Hospital has an administrator and also a chief medical officer.
Correct.
They're not the same.
That's correct. They're almost never the same. Such instability at the helm, if you will, has dire long-term consequences for any organization. Briefly, with respect to recruitment, I would say it is very difficult to assemble a crew to join a ship that has no captain. And recruitment is difficult enough, as you all know, in the healthcare industry these days. I'm pleased to say that we now have several highly qualified CMO candidates. And good news about Oregon State Hospital is beginning to get out there with respect to the courageous decision you folks have made about bricks and mortar and creating a new environment. My sense is we have much very positive to build on these days. But due to a variety of recruitment efforts, we have several very qualified CMOs, and we will do our level best in the coming weeks. They'll be here as soon as the next few weeks. Do our level best to secure one of those CMOs. That's critically important. Number two, we have to continue to augment our staffing throughout the organization, but most particularly with respect to our direct care staff. I know that may sound obvious to all of you, but it's critical that we achieve safer, more therapeutic staffing ratios, that we reduce the fatigue that's obviously and naturally associated with chronic and persistent overtime, and at the same time, make improvements to our budget by reducing that overtime. We must be more collaborative with advocates, and we must have more peer involvement at Oregon State Hospital. I've taken some early steps. I admit that they're baby steps, but I hope that eventually they'll be seen as significant steps for us to be more collaborative with advocacy groups, Mr. Jundeff's group in particular. And it's through some of those discussions that we have continued the comments about the possibility of creation of a board. There are two programs in your packets, by the way. One is called Recovery International, which is a peer program that we're in the process of launching. We actually have some rudimentary Recovery International groups going on the campus, and we're budgeting to grow those groups. And we also have a peer bridgers program in several positions to hire peers into the organization, and I encourage you to, in your spare time, your opportunities permitting, to review those. Number three, we have to accept the challenge and the responsibility of changing the culture that's developed at Oregon State Hospital, and there was a reference made to that earlier. I appreciated Mr. Ritterbush's comments on several different levels. In the absence of stable leadership, and in the absence, until recently at least, of the prospect of new facilities, a culture of hopelessness, helplessness, and even violence has arisen. And in the, by violence, I mean the patient-to-patient aggression and the patient-to-staff aggression. We now have an opportunity, and I may be accused from time to time of being a Pollyanna, but I honestly believe this. We now have an opportunity to replace those feelings of hopelessness, helplessness, and even violence with optimism, innovation, and respectfulness. And with regard to respectfulness, I would point out that there's information in your packets, and I'm proud and pleased to say tonight that we are going to become a zero seclusion and restraint facility, and we are taking steps as we speak to begin a movement in that direction and challenge ourselves to be a very different organization before we move into the new facilities that you're helping create. There's information about trauma-informed care in your packets. It's disturbing and at the same time shocking that 70 to 90% of our patients come to us traumatized in their past, many of them multiple times traumatized in their past. I have no idea what the percentage would be in our employee population, but by the nature of their work, they're subjected to trauma. And the first step toward us becoming a true zero seclusion and restraint facility is to become trauma-informed and to provide trauma-informed specific care. And I encourage you to read those. I think that decision and that direction, and with the addition of more staff and the opportunity to begin boldly moving in that direction, will do more to change the culture at Oregon State Hospital and its reputation in just a few years than almost anything else we can do. Without all these critical pieces in place, the most critical piece of all, the recruitment of the additional staff, not just for the new facility we're building, the additional staff we need now. We need as soon as we can get. will honor any budget phasing that we need to honor. But I will tell you folks that we need staff as quickly as we can recruit and hire and orient and bring them on board. And I say that not only because we have a new facility in our near future, but we also have the BHIP program, the information system for Oregon State Hospital coming online, hopefully a year before the new Oregon State Hospital here in Salem is opened. We need to train staff who have used information systems precious little at Oregon State. You all know that we have very little technological capability out there. And we, in order to pull staff away from the units and the wards and provide the training on the BHIP system, we need to backfill their positions on the wards at the same time. So we have a critical need to get staff on board as soon as possible. I fully appreciate, as the person whose head would ultimately roll, and short of that, will be held accountable for our successful recruitment, that recruiting the way we have in the past will not get the job done. I appreciated Donnell's comments earlier about our creating a much more attractive environment, which is not just compensation and benefits, but that's certainly an important part of the package. It also has to do with us improving the image of Oregon State Hospital. It has to do with us internally, the culture I talked about a few minutes ago, becoming advocates for other people to join us at Oregon State Hospital and see that as a desirable place to work that will be staffed properly and will have facilities that are state-of-the-art facilities. And that alone will be a bit of a culture change within our own organization. In any event, we find ourselves now doubly challenged. Not only is healthcare as an industry a very difficult industry to recruit within, but we have now the addition of the USDOJ report and media reports that have dug the hole that we would have otherwise found ourselves in even deeper. I'm convinced that there are, in fact, because of the closure of a lot of private mental health facilities in the state, a number of mental health professionals, allied health, and physician professionals who would prefer to work in a well-organized, well-led, state-of-the-art facility. I believe they're out there, and I believe they're out there across the country, and we're prepared to begin the recruitment to make Oregon State Hospital, especially with the continued leadership of Dr. Goldberg, DHS, Mr. Mickle, the governor's office, legislative leadership, make Oregon State Hospital a place that we can all be proud of, and in fact, state-of-the-art facility from top to bottom for the country to be a path to our door to work there.
Thank you, Superintendent. Thank you. Senator Carter wishes a question.
Just a couple of questions. Thank you so much for still being with us 70 days later. Just finish that. Outline to us, Mr. Superintendent, your progress regarding the application of seclusion and restraint. You know, and I know it's a short period of time, but this kind of, you know, give us a progress report.
Yeah. The candid report, Senator Carter, co-chairs, committee members, is not significantly different. It rises and falls based on a handful of patients and new admissions and patients who are particularly behavioral challenges for us. I'd be happy to have the opportunity to show you that with respect to restraint, we're actually below the national averages. With regard to seclusion, which I don't mean to use this as an excuse, but with regard to seclusion, I think our facilities and our far overcrowded wards, sometimes I think our clients prefer seclusion over going back to a room that was built for two and has four men in it.
Mm-hmm.
But the real answer to your question lies in our moving forward with a commitment to a zero seclusion and restraint.
Well, I think I wanted to just ask the question to know that is still in your mind because it was one of the topics of interest in terms of the lawsuit itself.
I assure you it is.
But I didn't expect us to be too far simply because you've not had a chance to hire more staffing to deal with the issue. But one thing I would like to say, to co-chairs Courtney and Rosenbaum, and that is when I see people as dedicated as Bruce Goldberg and as Mr. Nichol has been for years and for this legislature, this is Margaret Carter speaking, and this legislature has ignored it. And so I think people have been trying to be nice that have come to speak before us, but the legislature has been woefully negligent in terms of this institution, and that, and I see the burden lying on Dr. Goldberg and Mr. Nichol like I have, because I talk with them constantly, trying to keep them encouraged and let them not take flight either from all this great burden that they are faced with. I think it goes without saying that the two of you have an opportunity at this time to make sure that there is a board in place so that the politics will stop changing the in and out effects. I was on this committee in the late 1980s, and we are back at the same place, and I don't blame the federal government for not going away, because the Oregon legislature speeds itself up to take care of the means to keep from a lawsuit from happening, and then we leave these people, that the core of them that continue to work at the state hospital, we leave them, stress them out like hell, and then we come back and wipe our hands like we've done something. The legislature hasn't done anything. And so while you as co-chairs have the opportunity, I am hoping that you will work with this governor and that there is a board of directors out there that does not change based upon the different players that are in the legislative process, and that you set a precedence for us taking place, and we won't be back here another 5 to 10 years again.
Thanks, Senator Carter. More questions?
I have a couple of questions, and I certainly want to recognize and respect Senator Carter's comments here. I do think there's enough blame to go around as far as blame if we're going to spread that. But I do think that she's indicated the legislature has been weighed in the balances and found wanting. I'm sorry, but I also would like to say, Mr. Chair, I have deep admiration for the commitment that you have made to this, which is certainly without the leadership coming out of your office and the leadership offices in the legislature right now, we wouldn't have gotten as far as we have, and so I have great respect for that, and I hope we don't lose your energy on this as you get more involved with other things as we move down the line. But a couple of questions. Did I hear you right? That what you're really going to be trying to do is steal all of the good, qualified practitioners out there in our community programs, which are so desperately understaffed, overworked at the present time. Is that what we're doing when we're building this new state hospital?
Co-chairs, Representative Jensen, you heard me incorrectly.
Oh, okay.
What I intend to do is to give dedicated mental health professionals at a variety of levels throughout Oregon and the country an opportunity to work in a state-of-the-art facility and make history.
Still sounds a little like theft to me, but
sounded very different to me, Representative.
As we go from some of the rather humble environments that some of our people in the communities too have to work in, but that's okay. I understand the process. Well, the question, the one that's important that I wanted to ask you, How important has this committee been in your 70 days and what you've known about the hospital in the past and what you're seeing take place now? How important has this committee been in its actions and its involvement in the whole Oregon State Hospital culture / environment, morale, et cetera, et cetera, type of thing? And Mr. Chair, I don't want him to sugarcoat this. I mean, if it's been important, fine. I want to hear that. And if it's been a waste of our time, I want to hear that. I want your observations, and I would appreciate, when you get to Dr. Goldberg, if he would be interested in commenting on that, or anyone else in the department, I'd like to hear it.
Co-chairs, Representative Jensen, committee members, I can answer that in two ways. Had there not been a joint legislative oversight committee, I most likely wouldn't have expressed personally any interest in this position or this opportunity. Mm-hmm. On another level, the inherent awkwardness of coming from the private sector, thinking of you folks more or less as my board of directors and having infrequent access to you makes me yearn for a board. And I would welcome any and all of you to participate in that board along with others. But I wouldn't be here today talking to you had you not had the courage, or Dr. Goldberg not had the inspiration to assemble this group. And I'm deeply grateful that, following up on Senator Courtney's comments, that people wanted to serve on this. That galvanized me on a very personal level, that there is an opportunity here to get this right after so many years of getting it wrong. That's a longer-winded answer to a question you asked me, but
and I guess I knew this, but when I heard Mr. Orr giving us the details of what has happened to this influx administration that we've had at Oregon State Hospital, where the water and the personnel go through the pipes at Oregon State Hospital faster than the water has gone through the pipes at the Oregon State Capitol. This number of chief administrative officers, it's not no business, no industry, public or private, can operate on that amount of inconsistency, that amount of lack of coherent policy and direction, oversight. I think our leadership out there have a great responsibility in stopping that, and I think we as legislators have a great responsibility in paying very careful attention to that. And if we see something going astray on it, get up on our soapbox and really start screaming, because we have to have some consistent oversight in order to be able to get a hold of this huge problem that we're having. And thank you for indulging me for editorializing. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Representative. I'd like to hear from
you.
Oh, yes, please, go ahead.
Thank you. I really regret that I'm not able to be there, and I appreciate all the testimony that we have heard today and the excellent questions that the committee is asking of the panelists. And I regret not having the materials that obviously were handed out this afternoon. But I have a great concern over what I think I heard, and some of the testimony was hard to hear, but about Senator Carter asking about restraint and seclusion. And if I heard correctly, there hasn't been a huge improvement in that. And as I recall from the Fed report, one of their main concerns in reading that was about seclusion and restraint. And it sounds like that there is a board, perhaps, that will be set up by the legislature by September. This was the first that I'd heard of that. But when we first heard of all this in January, and if we're waiting until September until a board takes place, that's 9 months, I think. And it seems to me that we should be seeing some improvement between now and then. And I'm wondering if it wouldn't be appropriate to request that a report be sent to us on a regular basis, perhaps every month or 6 weeks or 2 months, but certainly addressing issues like seclusion and restraint. It seems to me that we should expect to see some improvement, at least in that issue and other issues as well. Would that be an appropriate request?
Could someone here respond? I don't know whether it's appropriate or not. I do have, at the end of this meeting, I do have a statement to make about the board, Representative Tomei, in terms of next time we meet. And we will have at least one more meeting of this group in September, although the co-chair and I don't know exactly when, but we're not. But the last statement about your reports, I would ask any and all people who are here at the witness stand if you care to comment on that.
Co-chairs, Representative Tomei, members of the committee, and Representative Tomei, this is Roy Orr speaking. I didn't mean to be cavalier in my response about seclusion and restraint. If I could, I'd like to just go back and sort of reiterate and maybe expand a little bit. Our use of restraint is below the national average, and I think that is definitely a tribute to the PROACT training, which this committee has heard about, and the message coming from this committee to OSH staff. Our use of seclusion still runs high, and both numbers tend to kind of fluctuate based on behavioral kinds of issues that we're dealing with, whether it's a new admission.
I'm
or
having trouble hearing the rest of that comment.
I'm not sure where I trailed off, Representative Tomei. Let me restate.
Can you hear him now?
Yes, I hear him.
Okay,
better.
Thank you. Go ahead. What, I don't know what to do.
I think we have made significant strides in the area of restraint. I think the area of seclusion remains a challenge for us, largely because of the facilities. I also want to acknowledge the fact that we have had great success using PROACT training, but I really want to emphasize that what should matter to all of us is an environment that seeks to be zero seclusion and restraint, no hands-on, no seclusion. And that is a philosophical, ideological, and significant change, ideologically and philosophically. I would be pleased to continue to report in whatever mechanism the committee so chooses or Dr. Goldberg so chooses, and certainly staff that we were granted via Ways and Means in the February supplemental session, and with great appreciation to SEIU for the ASP program that Donnell talked about earlier in her testimony, we'll have the opportunity to take many of those positions and target them on the units that have the highest levels of assault, and I do think we'll begin to see some significant changes.
Further question.
It's helpful to have actual figures that we could deal with, but it was.
And Representative Tomei, this is Diane Rosenbaum. I think when you see the materials that we all have tonight in front of us, they're extremely detailed.
Great.
And I think that'll address your concern.
Thank you, Representative Rosenbaum.
Representative Clem.
Sorry to stay on the seclusion restraint thing, but I remember this distinction before. The CRIP report talked about planned seclusion and restraint, which it seems to me you're talking in terms of the variability, like sort of incidental. Right. Is that really a distinction worth making, or is that very real that they talked about you don't plan someone's treatment plan if you're going to be in seclusion or restraint, but it does occur sometimes.
Right.
And then are you talking about really getting to a plan or unplanned all the way down to zero eventually?
The plan would be to have a zero seclusion and restraint philosophy housewide. Zero.
I would like to ask Judge Hargrave now, if I could, the master, to make a few comments should you choose to do so. You have a different role than either counsel Mickey Logan or the good superintendent or the good Dr. Goldberg has. So you've been on board about the same time, right? About 70 days, or has it been a little longer than that? A little longer, right, if I'm not mistaken? Or
yeah, this is Jim Hargreaves, the Governor's Special Master, and Senator Courtney chairs committee members. Senator, I got rank on it by 1 week.
Okay.
When I was here at the last meeting in February, I think it was my second day, as I recall, and I have learned a lot since then, and that's been my goal, is to try to begin to understand this sort of octopus that is the Oregon State Hospital and how it works and the various issues around it, and I think I'm beginning to gain some understanding about that. At that time, we talked about change and what it was going to take to produce a different culture and a different way of doing business at the hospital. And as I remember, I believe I said that my experience, culture change was a long, slow slog, and that I expected that to be the case here. Having now been on the job a while and having stuck my nose in many places around the hospital, I can tell you that my expectations are being confirmed, and change will be a long, slow slog, just like every other change project. There are pieces that are going to have to be put in place that eventually will get there, and I think that it will occur. But changing, I was just reading an excellent article on change the other day, and the nationally known author was saying, you know, even after you make change, usually it takes as much as 2 years for people working within the change before it becomes cemented and becomes a way of life. So I will tell you that, yes, you know, we're barely beginning. Some things are doing, you know, going faster than others, and that could be expected. But change comes slowly, and it's going to be the long, slow slog that I told you it's going to be. And I think that we will have a significant change in the culture of this organization by the time we get to the new state hospital. But it's going to take that amount of time to get there.
Thank you. Okay, before I ask for a closing statement by Goldberg, does anyone else have any questions or comments at this time for those here that are speaking to us? Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to just thank the new superintendent, because I did have an opportunity to visit the hospital. I think it was probably one of your first days there, and I can tell anybody who hasn't gone to the hospital and spent some hours there that it is. I don't see any way that you could have a tour of the hospital where you actually spent time going through the wards where anything was really hidden, because people are not shy, and the patients in particular are not at all shy about coming up to you and talking to you and exhibiting their illness and telling you about the conditions. And I think the people that work there were a little more tentative with us, but I think you're great, and I'll just say that quite frankly, but I also know from having been through working in large organizations that are trying to make major shifts that one of the hardest places to be is somebody who's been there for a long time working there. When these changes come in, it's sort of like you want to believe things are going to be different, but you also know a lot more than sometimes the people at the top who are coming in. And so I guess what I wanted to ask you tonight is just how you're seeing being able to both
attract and retain great new people, but also do something really significant to improve the morale and sort of the belief in the change of the people that are already there. Because we heard from them tonight, you know, that they feel like they're doing their part, but they're also still angry,
right.
And that they sometimes feel that their input isn't being
right.
valued or taken into consideration. So.
Yeah. It's co-chairs and members of the committee, thank you, Representative Rosenbaum, for your kind words. The enormity of the organization in just in human terms, 1,200, 1,300 people, and the fact that they work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and the organization knows no holidays. There is no such thing as a holiday. We have to staff through those as well. It makes it an extraordinary challenge to reach all of the employees, which obviously would be a goal of mine. I've initiated an innovation and comment campaign through our newsletter to encourage employees to email me directly. I've committed to responding to them. This is something Judge Hargreaves and I collaborated on early. It was a very valuable recommendation of his. Another component of that is even a poster campaign, which will start next week throughout the organization, so people on every shift will know that I'm inviting innovation and comment and criticism, and that the thinking that got us where we are will not get us out of where we are or get us where we need to go. I've also found that state government is a treadmill on high from 7 in the morning until about 7 at night. And it is sometimes very difficult to set aside the time between meetings to get out and to have those interactions, but it remains a goal of mine to do that. It is a tremendous challenge, and I don't pretend for a moment in front of anyone listening to say that I alone can do it. I will lean heavily on folks like Donnell and folks like Randy Ritterbush and Joe Thurman at the hospital and Frank Warner and Dr. Lori Skatch and many others for their leadership with our three unions in order to accomplish really what we need to accomplish. Can I add one other comment? I know you're wanting to close, Co-Chair Courtney. But Andy, legislative liaison at AMH, is in fact in the early stages of trying to coordinate some tours. And for obvious reasons, we want to keep those small, but these are something that Andy's trying to coordinate with members of the legislature. And you may be hearing more about those. And we welcome those tours and grateful for your time coming out early in my tenure to give you a tour.
We have someone else I'd like to hear from, and that's Linda Hammond on the construction of the hospital. She's not scheduled, sort of a surprise witness, but I'd like to have the committee get a quick update on the actual construction and where we are on the timetable, if I could, please. And Linda, how about if you give us some, because we are going to build that new facility out there, and I'd like to know. I don't think she's planning to testify, but here she is. So please.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Linda Hammond and I'm the administrator for the Oregon State Hospital Replacement Project. I'm here tonight to talk to you about where we are in the process. We are on schedule and on time for proceeding with the development of the new facility. We have taken an opportunity to lengthen the actual time we put into developing the program within the facility. It's very, very important that the design of your new state-of-the-art functions in a way that is driven by the needs of the patients and the staff. So we have invested several months longer than we planned to. We feel investing this time is going to save us time as we move time and money as we move through the program to stop us needing to make changes as we look at what we're putting together in the actual footprint and the design of the facility. We've had extensive input from staff, from patients, and in fact today in Paychex, a flyer went out to all staff so that we are going around to all the wards so that we can talk to folks and reflect back the information we've received from them and talk to them about how the new design meets many of the needs that they've identified. We've attended patient meetings, stakeholder meetings, and have an extensive group involved in helping with that development. We are, as I say, focused on the facility being for treatment and recovery in a wellness environment. The design is about being state-of-the-art, being able to look at the way people function and the way people become successful. And we are pleased to tell you at this time, having looked at the various models, including Canada and the rest of the United States, inviting experts to us to talk to us about what works and what doesn't work, we feel we have a really good model that we're moving forward with, and the information is in your packet. So I can stop there or give you more information, whichever works.
So generally we don't know quite when the groundbreaking would be. Can you get into that or not? I'm just curious because our deadline, when's this supposed to open again? Was it 2011? Is that right? Okay. Where are we on that?
Co-chair is a member of the committee, Senator Courtney. Our first activities will begin on July 1 on the campus, which will be working on some of the cottages, which will house patients as part of the bed count. And then the main groundbreaking for the actual work on the bulk of the new facility will begin in September. So we are on schedule for that.
Okay. Any questions about this? Okay, I really appreciate you willing to come up on. You didn't know we were going to testify. Okay, do you want to give us a short closing statement, Dr. Goldberg?
I would, Senator Courtney. I think what I'd like to do is answer Representative Jensen's question as a closing statement, which is, I think this committee has been extremely useful. And I think it's been useful because of the ability to gain, I think, a common understanding of where we are and where we need to be in terms of improving patient care at the state hospital. I say that knowing that we've, this has been through, I think, a natural process of, initially anger and concern, and we've had to develop a means of how we work together and communicate and present information and what it is the committee wants and what it is that we have. I think we've come a very long way in doing that. And I think we are, I'm really pleased to see sort of where we've come in a very short time together in terms of developing this collective understanding and looking at how we continue to move this forward, because we all have a part in this. I think that, we have a part in operationally making it happen. I think the legislature has a role in providing the resources and the oversight. I think the staff and the community have a role in all of this. And I think these hearings have provided an opportunity for us to do this in a way that's been very productive. And I think that it's evolving in a good way. So I think it's been very, very helpful. And with that, I will close.
Thank you. I want to thank everyone who's come tonight. We've been here almost 3 hours and willing to sit through this. I want to thank those who are willing to testify under the public hearing section. Thank you very much for that. I want to thank my committee members and Rick and Aaron, the committee staff, for being here tonight. Council Logan, you had a very difficult task. I hope we didn't wear you out. I feel bad. We pushed you and pushed you to try to tell us what you think and what's in the minds of the feds, and I'm not sure anybody can figure that out. But you were very good, and I appreciate you being willing to take all our questions. Superintendent Orr, I asked you when you asked for here, do you really know what you're getting into? If you didn't, I think you do now, and your testimony was remarkable, just at least in my opinion. And the masters, thank you for willing to come here tonight. You are the totally independent force and source, even with the governor who hired you. Linda, you came up at the last moment. I think you got surprised. You didn't know we were going to do that, so thank you for willing to do that. Of course, you, Dr. Goldberg, are
Yankee fan, so I don't want to, I'm not real free. I'll leave it at that. But you have a very tough job here because you're overseeing this whole thing, and you've been great to work with. The co-chair and I, as I've indicated to my committee members, we've talked about this in terms of where we go. We think we'd like to get together in September, another meeting, and we don't know quite when in September, and we'll work with staff, you know. We would like to, and Superintendent, you said the word tag, we'd like you, working with the players that you know how to work with, to come up with this board proposal, whatever that means, both in terms of makeup, groups they represent, as well as the authorities and duties of that board, and have that proposal ready for us in September. We think that, I'd like to think that the committee would go along with that request. Is that all right with my fellow committee members?
Yes.
To do that? It appears, Representative Jensen, you just look at me like, is that okay or what?
Mr. Co-Chair, it's obviously okay if this is the co-chair's desire and wishes. I am mulling this board thing around in my mind, and I'm sorry I haven't reached
right.
My mind slows down once in a while, and it's in one of those slow modes today. So.
Well, I want to make it clear, I'm thinking about it. I'm curious about it. It's come from a lot of certified smart experts, so I am curious to know about this board because we've never associated a board with a hospital. We surely haven't others. And I don't know. But I'd like to know what you think and what you plan for us to do. Does it require statutory changes? Who's on it? How does it relate to the superintendent and to this chief medical, whatever this person is? I don't know. And so it's a new... So is there anything else for the individuals wish to make a statement now before we close it down?
I would.
Sure.
I would like to see the legislature's representatives, and that is this committee, know the level quite well, because if you didn't hear what Superintendent Orr said, he does not have access to the legislature as often as he would love to have access to the legislature. So a board would be there to help answer some of the tough decisions and help deal with activities around other partners that he has to deal with. And as players change in the legislative process, we do pay attention because of legal ramifications, or we don't pay attention, and then the morale issues around staffing patterns, around staff, around dollars and resources that need to go to the hospital, it does not get done. And this committee has a unique opportunity to show the staff at this hospital and the other people that are engaged, as well as the clients, to give them a life that has a shelf of its own. And when you have a board that is there to help take charge and to be an asset to the upper level administration, it serves a purpose that the legislature cannot serve, because we are a part-time, a citizen's legislature. So if we as members of the legislature cannot reach some level of conclusion in terms of the kind of support that they're needing, and leaving these people out there to themselves, if you didn't hear the data, you might need to open your books up again. 5 medical people in a short period of time, 5 administrators down. I mean, that's staggering stuff. We have a problem here. And if we can't understand it, who's been listening to it for the last 7 months, however long we've been doing this, I don't know who's going to understand it. So I'm hoping that you will mull your thoughts well in thinking about where do we go from here with this institution. Because it is an Oregon problem, not just a state hospital. When Oregonians reached the level that they have reached in terms, if they really, really knew, thank God for Michelle Cole being here, because I'm sure we'll start knowing, that the conditions that the legislature has allowed this hospital to be in, I think that they would be absolutely shocked as well.
Okay. Michelle Cole is the Oregonian reporter you're referring to.
That is right.
I just wanted to call her up. Representative Jensen, you wish to comment?
Yes.
I must follow a little on Senator Carter's comments and on the board and share some of the mullings that have been drifting through the fog in my mind. One thing I'm, of course, I'm assuming that this is not a paid board. It's like other boards. Now, that may not be what we come up with, but I don't, I mean, then we've got another quote-unquote ways and means problem to, you know.
I don't think we know.
You know, the superintendent, complained because he doesn't have a, didn't feel like he had enough access to us or something like that. And of course, I'd have to remind him that be careful what you ask for. You know, it's
he did ask for.
He's possibly have more access than he wants from us. You know, we're pretty easy to get a hold of in terms of email. Just kind of push the button and it's all there. The thing that concerns me, you know, with the board idea, and I don't discount the significance or importance of it, but you put together, Representative and Senator, a committee here that has demonstrated a significant interest and investment in this issue and in this project. We've had this problem, for going on a long time now, and it's, of course, it's taken DOJ to come forth, which got, obviously, our attention in the legislature, but it's had some of our attention for a long time before the Department of Justice, got here. But what you started here, I think, has been very significant, and I'm not speaking against the board, but I'd hate to not see this committee working on a regular basis for some period of time if we decide to go the route of the board, until that board is well in place, well educated, well informed, and ready to, step in and take over. I mean, your leaderships have been incredible in helping us move, I think, forward on this. And I know it's been a lot of work. I appreciate that. But anything worthwhile doing is going to be a lot of work. Life doesn't come in easy, and this is worthwhile. And to the superintendent, just in kind of closing, he talked about and he got close to talking using the quote that I try to keep hanging on my door in my office if and when it gets back in place up there. You can't solve a problem with the same thinking that created it. And I think, we've done a great job. I think they're doing a great job of trying to get some new thinking into this. And it sounds to me like we've got some real promise here to revolutionize, is probably the right word, the Oregon State Hospital and mental health delivery system in the state of Oregon. So thank you for indulging me.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. One quick question. Dr. Goldberg, where are you coming to the Julie board on issues involving state hospital?
Yes.
I'm on that board, just so you know. I'm slow, so you got to come to me a long time in advance, please. Not to upset you, I'd just like to know, please, don't you? We are adjourned.